call the meeting of the Ways and Means to order. We do have a quorum.
Look who's here.
I'm going to take my own advice, everybody, and turn off your cell phones. Not just down, but off. So that they do not interfere with the communication system. Thanks to the knowledge of President Pawlowski. Today we have on the agenda four bills. Let me give you a couple of announcements for people's schedules. The presentations today will be on the agenda, the e-waste bill, higher ed bill, the jobs and economic development bill, and the omnibus health and human services bill. Health and Human Services bill is a large bill, and they started printing it an hour or so ago. And if we get copies for everybody in the world, it'll take 7 hours to do that. We're working on the printing of them and trying our best to accommodate everybody, and working with Representative Holberg on possible amendments. We're not going to be stifling anybody's ability to have amendments. But if we can continue on to the day and accommodate the amount of copies that we need to have, would help us. So as copies come down, maybe we can do some sharing. Maybe not everybody in the audience will get a copy exactly at the same time, but we'll try our best to accommodate as many copies as possible. Otherwise, we will be here at 1 o'clock tonight if we wait for that copying to them. So I appreciate the working with Representative Holberg and the Republicans on that issue. So we may be able to go straight through, and if, depending upon things, we may have to take a break, but my hope is that we are able to go straight through. I'm going to tell you that we'll watch for committee meetings next week. There are some other bills that are being forwarded to us and some other policy issues. We'll get the announcements out when that happens on different bills. Representative Holberg?
And Mr. Chair, at one point last week you put out a notice for Ways and Means on Tuesday time to be announced. I'm assuming that there will be no Ways and Means Committee meeting tomorrow. Is that correct?
Representative Holberg, thank you for reminding me. Yes, there will not be. We'll concentrate on the House floor. Okay. Bring your computers to the House floor. Representative Sertich?
Mr. Chair, wait, might we though have one more Ways and Means Committee meeting this week?
There is a possibility we may have one more Ways and Means Committee. If we do, it'll be a short one, and it's on the issue of a target that we've been talking about, but they're not ready yet for TANF and health care access. Okay. We have available then the minutes from the previous meeting. That Representative Carlson moves the minutes of April 14th, 2007. Any corrections or additions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And carried. The first one I want to bring up today is House File 854, and the chair will move House File 854. Be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. Again, I want to kind of announce the purpose of the Ways and Means Committee is to establish targets and then to make sure that these are in the target. I know that we have an amendment that is necessary for us to bring that into compliance. And what pages?
No,
And members, this just was noticed a little bit ago by our staff. And on the fiscal note, there's an expenditure to the general fund of $26,000 in this bill. And in all the other expenditures to the other departments, it comes out of the fund. So this will just mean sure that that is transferred from the fee that's associated with this into the appropriate commission to pay for that amount that's associated with, I think, the Department of Administration. This comes to us by our staff for this particular provision, and it will then remove the $26,000 that's associated with the Department of Administration costs back into the fees. So the chair would move H0854A12. A discussion on that. Any discussion? Not, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Then, Representative Slater, you're here because of the provisions in this bill that will deposit money and expend money from the environmental fund that you create. Do you want to have just a very, very brief overview of the bill, very briefly? And members, with the amendment that was adopted, there is zero impact on the general fund. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With that caution in mind about being brief and sticking to the financial pieces, I will simply say that this bill is still basically the bill that came out of the task force that has been worked on for the last 5 years and improved as we go along. And so at any rate, with regard to the financial pieces that are of interest to this committee, referring to the fact that the bill requires manufacturers to pay a $5,000 base fee in the first program year, reduced to $2,500 thereafter, and a variable amount ranging between 30 cents and 50 cents a pound for any shortfall in their target. And these costs are, all the administrative costs in this are covered, and the revenues raised from the manufacturer's fees will be distributed by the Pollution Control Agency through contracts with counties and private haulers outside the 11-county metro area. And I would also mention that the other piece of particular interest to this committee would be the creation of the account. The appropriations manufacturer's registration fees are deposited in the electronic waste account established in the Environmental Fund. Until June 30th, 2009, this money is appropriated annually from the account to the Pollution Control Agency to administer this legislation. The remaining funds are distributed by the agency in competitive grants to counties, private entities outside the 11-county metro area, with preference given to those helping manufacturers meet their recycling obligations.
Okay, questions? Representative Hobart.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, this is the first time I've seen this bill. Can you show me where in the bill it talks about the distribution of the money within the 11-county metro area, and does it only go to counties or privates, or why do we have the difference here?
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg. There's a discrepancy, or not discrepancy, but a differentiation between outside the 11-county metro areas because of the distance in many cases. There was a concern that there would just be interest in picking up, you know, the low-hanging fruit, as it were, in the 11-county metro area rather than going to counties outside of that area. And so that's where we didn't even, or I didn't mention in this time, but there's a 1.5, there's an additional incentive to recyclers to be collecting, and also to manufacturers for those items that are collected outside the 11-county metro area. And I don't know if you have any, you know, further questions about that. Possibly our gun from the Pollution Control Agency could address that if you have a very specific question beyond that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Saylor, again, my question, I mean, I'm seeing on page 7, lines 713 to 721, it talks about distribution of funds outside the Leavenworth County metro area. Where does it talk about the distribution of funds within the Leavenworth County metro area?
Is that fair?
I'm sorry. I would ask, or then if you have a...
Is there someone from the audience that can answer that specific question?
Okay. So. Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, also, I just kind of reiterate what I had said before. There isn't anything specifically in here, and the part I'm reiterating is that it is under... The manufacturers and recyclers will be collecting within the metropolitan area because it is much easier for them to do so. And the only reason that it was put in the bill as something outside the 11 county was because we know that it is more difficult to encourage people to move out beyond where some of the expenses are a little higher.
Okay, Mr. Chair, okay, now...
Do you want
additional information? Yeah, I do. I'm okay. Still not getting my question answered here. So now you said that within the 11-county metro area, the counties and the privates will not be doing this. The manufacturers will be doing that. Is that correct?
Okay. Representative Saylor?
Yes, actually, Chairman and Representative Holberg, they will be collecting throughout the whole state. I mean, there is not a provision saying that they don't have to collect in the metropolitan area. It's just that we needed to put extra provision in for outside of that 11-county area to encourage collection at that point.
Let's see if there's a witness that can I see if that can even clarify that. Would that be okay?
That might help.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Art Dunn, and I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
I wonder, can you answer Representative Holberg's question, or do you want to restate it?
I believe that her question was, are the materials going to be collected by manufacturers inside of the metro area, and how are revenues going to be distributed within the metro area? This section and provision of the bill gives a fairly modest amount of money to the Pollution Control Agency to help set up collection programs outside of the 11-county metro area, because most of the counties and jurisdictions within this 11-county area either have programs available already, and so there was a fear that rural Minnesota and counties in rural Minnesota needed or might need some help in setting up some collection programs. So that's why the restriction is that these monies can only be used outside of the 11-county area and not being used within that area. But manufacturers under this proposal are required to implement recycling programs or meet targets statewide, and they will do that either working with local government or with running their own programs or working with contractors in order to do it.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, then, can you tell me the source of this revenue to support these programs outside the 11 county metro area? Is the source of revenue come from the entire state?
Representative Dunn.
Mr. Chair,
that dates me a little bit.
Yes, it does. Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the source of revenue, the funds, are derived from the registration fee that manufacturers of electronic devices pay. Initially, that fee is a $5,000 per year fee in year one. In year two, it drops to $2,500 per year. So the total amount of revenue that's available in year one is around $800,000, and total revenue available in year two would be $400,000 from that base fee.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, and
Representative Holberg.
Then the manufacturers are the ones that are going to pay this fee. Of course, they're going to pass it on to the consumers. We don't grow money on trees, as far as I know. And so are they going to have any say in how this is distributed, or, in fact, are they going to be paying money to, in fact, set up competitors to their recycling programs?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg. It is the intention that we're not setting them up to work against other people. You know that their own funds are not going out to fund people working against them. In fact, we did, I read that part, 7.19, and that is, in awarding competitive grants under this clause, the commissioner must give preference to counties and private entities that are working cooperatively with manufacturers to help them meet their recycling obligations.
And, Mr. Chair, so then are the manufacturers going to be represented in this distribution? Do you have some, like, little committee that's going to decide who's going to get the money? And does the business community have a say in that?
Mr. Representative Taylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, no. That is, the money is awarded through competitive grants through the Pollution Control Agency. And I would just like to further add that it's not, it's never been the intent that this would be this program would be solely funded by manufacturers. It's designed to be a partnership with counties and cities and the consumers and the manufacturers. So the counties will still have some obligations, as they always have, to dealing with their solid waste commitments. But they are different within, you know, each county. But it's to allow a certain amount of local control within our counties.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, about how much, has there been any testimony as how much this is going to add to the cost of a computer monitor, a television set?
Representative Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg. I don't know that, but possibly someone else does. I don't know exactly what might be intended or not intended. That would be a decision up to the manufacturers, and I've not been able to determine myself exactly what they might choose to incorporate or not incorporate. I'm sure it has to do with the cost of production and other things that are their own private information.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how a fee to the state has anything to do with the cost of production. But and then just that one additional question. I'm assuming that there are people like me that may have a couple video monitors and or TVs sitting in their garage, not quite sure what to do with them at this point. So I would assume the first year of this program there's probably going to be a surge or an increase. How does that work? Do I have to prove that when I purchased this, if I purchased it 3 year post this law going into effect, and whether or not there'd be a fee on that particular item, or?
Representative Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, great question. No, there is no requirement for any residents as to where they bought these items, when they bought them, you know, whether it was something you managed to inherit from your brother or whatever. People, this is just to make sure that we finally are giving the opportunity for people to bring these materials in to clean out those basements, the garages, the spare rooms, that as you noted, you know, most people do actually have two or three computers, or many people do, and or television sets. And the reason that the fee was higher in the first place really is to address setting this up, the program up in the first place, and recognizing that, you know, we will have an influx originally of some of the pent-up supply, shall we say. And then furthermore, we are considering that in 2009, the day after the Super Bowl, no less, law goes into effect for digital conversion to digital, which will be another reason, another upsurge in TVs that will be coming to the solid waste folks. So we know that there will be initially, you know, kind of two offerings, one of which when people clean out, as you mentioned, and the other of which when the switch comes. And we want to make sure that our counties and solid waste facilities are set up to deal with those when they come in.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, but I'm just trying to figure this out. And then, so if we could go to page 6, and you have this whole really nice word problem for a math test somewhere, I think is what it would be good for somebody, but I'm not able to figure it all out at this point. Why on lines 13 and 14 would you have a lower factor being 0.6 for the first year and 0.8 for the second, if in fact you recognize a surge in the beginning.
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg. The reason for that is that in response to concerns from manufacturers, they were concerned about not having enough material that first year. And actually, the rates originally set up by the task force, that Representative Osment chaired, and I'd also like to give that task force the credit for this wonderful mathematical equation set here. But at any rate, that on 6.14, originally that would have been set at 1-to-1, the conversion. If the manufacturer sold a computer or television in the state of Minnesota, they would also be responsible for recycling. As more and more information came, more data became available to us, and also through continual consultations with all of the stakeholders involved, including the manufacturers were concerned that there might be they might be required to collect more stuff than was out there, and we wanted to make sure that their concerns were heard, which they were, and that's why we ended up with a 0.6. We did go down. I feel fairly confident that there will be no problems having enough material as people actually descend to the basements and bring everything up. But that's what's behind that.
And Mr. Chair, then are they put at a disadvantage if there is a big surge the first year and then the number of pounds of recycled materials falls off in the second year as a result? Are the manufacturers penalized for maybe the perception that they're moving backwards and aren't making progress?
Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg. In the second year, because of the switch over to the digital, we're expecting that we will not have a drop. But I'd also like to point out to members that it is part of this bill that there will be a review by the Pollution Control Agency. They have to review this and report back to us so that if there are any changes, any fluctuations one way or another, that information comes back here to the legislature and that we can adjust if in case some of these ratios should prove to be not, you know, correct. But we've worked very, very hard with all of the folks involved to try to come up with a fair ratio, and we have, as I said before, moved back from the 1-to-1 to the 0.6 to try to accommodate those things. We really were looking at, as the task force started out with this, trying to figure out how can we make this work, how can we make it move ahead, and we did make many amendments. I think that's why, as we say, it started out the task force bill, and most of it still remains that, but we did take a lot of testimony and a lot of input from folks trying to make sure that we had the best bill possible.
Representative Holbrook, is that it?
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Saylor, my questions are in regards to, and I'm curious, and maybe I missed this, but on page 6, lines 21 through 25, I remember when we had this in Environment Committee, I was concerned that we were paying 50 cents when there was recyclers out there doing it for much less. Is this language, new language, this prorated money per pound?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, yes, it is. It's language that was amended in, again, in response to concerns by the manufacturers and our desire to make sure that this bill is as fair as possible and building in actually some opportunities for a gradation in the fee if they do not meet their targets. It was actually even suggested by the Department of Revenue, who said that they would not have any problem with this, and they sort of thought that it would be fine to do this. But it is something newer than you had first heard.
Representative McAleer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Saylor, thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. I've got one more follow-up. If we find out that it's not costing us, well, first of all, I wanted to ask one. Do the manufacturers now support the bill?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, some of the manufacturers do, some of them do not. So there are still a few that don't. As with many bills, there are frequently people that don't agree on everything. But many of the manufacturers do, but there are still some that don't. Other than manufacturers, I would just like to review a list of people that do, or organizations.
Oh,
no? Okay.
That wasn't the question.
I won't review that list.
Thank you.
Unless someone asks the question.
No.
President McNamara.
I won't make the committee go to that, Mr. Chair. Representative Saylor, what I was curious, though, if we're collecting, if the market is 25 cents or 28 cents a pound, will we return, or are we going to, will we ever lower the 50 cents? I just think, I still don't believe 50 cents is the right number. I think it's worth charging twice as much, I believe.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, that's we have the opportunity to make that change. In fact, we have very carefully kept that in this bill so that there will be review by the Pollution Control Agency. And if it indeed turns out that 50 cents is not the right number, especially as the market evolves and things change in the future, we want to be flexible and stay with market evolutions, because it's not the intent to make a bunch of money here, but rather to make sure that we deal with the materials.
Representative Osmond, to that point. Representative Osmond.
Representative McNamara, the goal of this is to promote recycling. The last thing we want to have is a state collecting a fee for things that are not recycled. So that's the reason why having the fee up to higher than what the market is. So the drive is out there for manufacturers to go to the recyclers, go to the people transfers, use the free enterprise system to try and make this system work and get this material out of landfills, because we're all paying for this through improper disposal. So we want to try and encourage recycling. That's why that particular fee is high. We also don't want it to be exorbitant, so it will be adjusted as time goes on. And we actually get more experience in this. But it does need to be higher than recycling costs, because you want people to go out there and just keep the government out of it and just do the recycling. As long as you're recycling, there isn't anything other than your registration fee to pay.
Representative Shumper.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Saylor, I'm concerned about the other end of the equation here, and that is the outstate counties. Is there going to be enough grant money for them to do these programs? Or are they going to be mandated to do some programs that they may not have enough funding for?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shumper, this completely addresses the fact that there was an unfunded mandate. When this ban went into effect last year, without this piece was not passed, there actually was a requirement that the counties collect, since these materials could not be put in landfills. People were either told to take it back home and store it, or people just kind of chose to interpret that by maybe leaving it in ditches. But at any rate, this bill is to address the fact that counties need to have some assistance in dealing with this waste. The Association of Minnesota Counties, we've been working very closely with counties all over the state, the AMC has been working very closely on this bill, been working with the solid waste administrators around the state. All of them are on board with this, and all of them have agreed, as we have talked with the Pollution Control Agency and other folks looking at the numbers, looking at the latest data to make sure that we're not, you know, going too far the other direction, and yet listening to the questions and concerns of the manufacturers as well. So we believe that this is a balanced bill, and I can assure you that I've been keeping the county's best interest very much at heart, and wanting to rectify the situation of not having this part completed, you know, when the ban went into effect last year.
Representative Chumper.
Oh, and so it looks like there will be enough money with these fees then to do this? Or can you tell at this point in time?
Representative Saylor.
I didn't know who addressed it. I'm sorry. Madam Chair, I couldn't see you. And Representative Shumper. No, this is also not, this bill does not intend to make this solely manufacturer's responsibility. It's also county responsibility. And the solid waste departments understand that. They accept that. They know that that's, you know, something that they will be doing as part of their regular programs. It's been incorporated or will be incorporated in those cases where they haven't already started. But, again, I have worked very closely with the counties, And as we've looked at more data coming in, we recognize that this should be something that will work out. I would also just like to mention that this kind of reminds me a little bit of the fluorescent light bulbs, you know, as those are another piece of kind of electronic waste, but a different category. As that program began, many counties charged initially. Now, some may still, I don't know about those all, but I do know that many counties have ceased to do that as the market forces have come along, and we expect that this will again, this also will adjust with market forces.
Are there any other questions? All right. I will now renew. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Swigand.
Madam Chair, just very quickly, going to represent Taylor's questions on.
Representative Swigand, would you please use your mic?
No. No. Madam Chair, I will. I'm on the got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning.
It happens to all of us, sir.
No, it didn't to me. I got up on the right side. Madam Chair. Representative Saylor, if I could, going to Section 3 of the bill, the registration fee again, I know Representative Holberg was asking some questions about the formula. Could you just give me what the anticipation is of what the total dollar amount is going to be raised by this registration fee? Is this what is the variable fee that's referred to?
Madam Chair and Representative Figham, no. The variable fee is separate from what you've seen with the fiscal note. What we expect to come in with the registration fee from approximately 160 manufacturers is $800,000 the first year because it's at $5,000 registration fee, and then after that dropping off to the $400,000. And that is the part that is set up to deal with the administrative pieces to make sure that all of that gets going. But we knew that there would be some additional program costs the first year, which is why it was higher in the first year, not in the second.
And Madam Chair, Representative, that's the registration fee then. And the variable fee, how much do you anticipate to be raised by the variable fee?
Representative Singer.
Madam Chair and Representative Figham, that will depend very much on how much manufacturers are able to collect, on how much people turn in. Right now, I don't have a figure for that, but I believe that possibly the Pollution Control Agency may have some figure. We have not, it's not a hard, fast figure, and particularly since we put in the variable rate, again, to assist manufacturers with some of the compliance and kind of help them feel a little bit more comfortable with that, that does make it a little bit more complicated to imagine because we have more variables involved, the 30 cents, the 40 cents, the 50 cents, depending on what part of their target they do not hit. When it was all 50 cents, it would have been easier to make, you know, some sort of an assumption, but it does loosen that up somewhat.
Madam Chair, just very quickly then, Representative Saylor, are we talking hundreds of thousands, millions, 10 million, 1 million, 100,000? Do you
Representative
have
Saylor.
I mean, we're dealing with something here that... Yeah, I'd like to have an idea, you know.
Okay.
Representative Saylor.
Madam Chair, Representative Spigum, we do, if everything works the way we're hoping that it will, all of the materials will be recycled and there won't be any 30 cents, 40 cents, whatever, because if they meet their targets, then that's all taken care of. So it's very difficult to say exactly what that might be. Hopefully, all of the materials will be recycled and then there would be nothing to pay.
Okay, any other comments or questions? Oh. Representative Holberg.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but so where does that money go after you've got these programs set up in the first year if you're collecting millions of this variable rate on top of the... Who gets that money?
Representative Staley.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, we won't be collecting there won't be millions collected. That is not at all the intent, and, you know, whatever amount came in that was too much, again, the Pollution Control Agency is going to be monitoring that and reporting back, and we will change anything because it's, you know, not the intent to to create any kind of slush fund or have any extra monies in there, merely to make sure that we have enough in the fund so that counties can apply. It's also possible that some counties may not be able to. Right, currently we have some deficits in infrastructure in rural counties around the state, simply because of large counties and not having transfer sites that are equipped currently to deal with this type of waste. We know that some counties will have to be putting in additional infrastructure, and it may not happen all in the first year simply because sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get these pieces put together according to county plans, so that it's not something just kind of visited upon them overnight. But if there's ever any extra money, you know, in there, that is, again, going to be brought to our attention by the Pollution Control Agency. We will adjust any numbers. We only want to make sure that we have enough money there to deal with the product so the counties and property taxes are not affected adversely by that.
Representative Swiggle.
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, one last question. I can, looking at the bill, I see we have manufacturers, we have retailers, we have consumers that I am, right? I can see the skin in the game for the manufacturers, and you can't tell me exactly what the skin is, whether it's just the registration fee or it could be some millions of dollars or the variable fee as well. I can see the skin in the game for me, the consumer, because all those costs are going to be based upon my computer, my DVD, whatever is going to be that much more expensive. Where's the skin in the game for the retailer?
Representative Taylor. Mr. Chair and Representative Bigham, actually some of the retailers are manufacturers, and so they're, you know, involved with some of that same skin as you were mentioning. Some do have their own labels, but I will refer you also to page 9, the recycler's responsibility that they have to, the retailer's responsibilities that they need to report by July 1 of each year to the manufacturer the number of video display devices that were sold and the model number labeled with the manufacturer's brand sold to households in the previous year. Also, the retailer who sells a new video display device shall provide that information to households describing where and how they may recycle video display devices, advising them of opportunities and locations for collections.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, the retailer's skin in the game is information.
Mr. Chair and Representative Taylor. Bigham, for the most part, yes.
Representative
Polbert. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the bill summary on page 6, the very bottom of it, and it talks about if all manufacturers ignore their obligation, this could raise $13.2 to $14.4 million per year. So I guess it's somewhere between... Oh, I'm sorry, it's the fiscal note that I'm looking at. So somewhere sounds like somewhere between zero to $14.4 million a year could be raised. I'm still not understanding what you're going to spend this money on. You have the fee that's outside of this. This is just on the variable rate stuff. And so you're going to spend the $800,000 the first year to send out money to everybody that doesn't have a program outside of the 11 county metro area, and they're going to set up their little program and they're send out brochures to their residents or their potential customers to say, bring us your stuff. And then this variable rate continues to be in force and be collected. Let's just say half. Let's say they get $6 to $7 million a year. What are they going to spend that money? I mean, that's a lot of brochures and grants. I'm still not getting where that money's going.
Representative Taylor.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, it's entirely possible that there wouldn't be any money in that fund if all of the materials are recycled. That 30 cents, 40 cents, 50 cents is for manufacturers that fall short of their target. Additionally, some of those other costs, you know, of what they're spending the money on, that is up to counties in many cases, as you say, advertising costs and setting up collections in many cases. But again, those are individual county decisions. But I don't foresee that there's going to be any great amount of money in this, because we are trying to set this up in a way that encourages, it's always been intended to encourage the manufacturers to recycle the materials at the adjusted 0.6 rate.
Ma'am Chair, just one last question. I'm still not figuring all this out, but so let's just, hypothetically, let's just say this program takes in $7 million under the variable rate. Half of the stuff gets recycled and half doesn't. Under this bill, does any of that $7 million become available for costs within the 11 county metro area, or is it all set up to go outside?
Representative Saylor. Okay, Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Chair. To members, what the program does is actually sets up for recycling to occur all across the state of Minnesota, definitely in the metropolitan area. What we're talking about is there is a separate program in here where the registration fees are set aside to try and help out some of the transportation costs in rural Minnesota. But as far as the dollars that are going for recycling, that will be provided to all the recycling that's occurring wherever it's occurring across the state of Minnesota. Most of that's going to be in the Severn County area. That I would believe that Representative Saylor could confirm that. But that's really how it's not like this is set up for metro versus rural. The only thing that's different is rural has a little more transportation money available to them. But the recycling dollars will be there to help out all recyclers across the state of Minnesota to pay for the recycling. This is not money going into another program. You ask where the dollars are going to go to. If they're collected because if a manufacturer did not recycle and they paid that fluctuating fee, that variable fee, that money then is set aside to help pay for the recycling wherever it may be occurring across the state of Minnesota or in the future as it occurs. It's all there. What we're trying to do is keep government out of this thing, to set up so that the money is actually collected to go to recycling. It's recycling that we want to occur,
and
not
so
our government.
Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, and I guess Representative Osmond, in your role as phone a friend here for the bill author, then will manufacturers that recycle on their own, private recyclers, and states or county or city recyclers all have the same opportunity to get revenue out of this fund absent the registration fee outside the 11 county area set up monies?
Representative Osmond.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, that's the way it was when I was offered the bill. I assume it's still the same. Representative Saylor.
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, yes.
Finally. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Osmond.
All right.
No, I appreciate your help.
All right. Are there any other questions before we go to a vote? All right. I am going to ask that we renew Representative Solberg's motion that House File 854 pass as amended and be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No.
The bill has passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Before we start the next bill, Representative Saylor, I know that you're leaving to go someplace. Do you want to give us just a little bit of an idea?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair. My nephew is receiving an award for peace and justice at St. John's, St. Ben's University this afternoon, and I wanted to be able to attend this event for him.
Okay.
He was at the first swearing in and sat next to me on the floor and is interested in politics, and of course I'm trying to encourage him to be interested and maintain that interest. So I thank you very much for allowing this bill to come before you first. Thank you all.
Give him our best wishes and congratulations. Okay, the next bill then on the agenda is Senate File 1989, the Higher Education Omnibus Bill. Representative Rukavina. He's just here. There you go. I couldn't see you over Representative Curtis, and he's sitting down.
Mr. Chair, I always use my comeback line on that. How tall are you going to be when you're laying on your back? But I think you might be taller than
me. I might be taller. To keep this up, you know, I always wanted you to use that line on me because I wanted to say I'll still be taller than you. Particularly if I'm on my back. Representative Rukavina, I have moved that House File 1989 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. Representative Rukavina, you were given a target. And let me ask the question, are you within your target?
Mr. Chair, I believe I am within my target. I think you'll see on the last page of the fiscal note that I am right there on target.
And in good iron range tradition, he spent it all.
There was a few hundred grand, but I didn't want Representative Swigum to spend it.
Very good, sir. Representative Rukavina, very, very quickly, if you can just give us a quick synopsis of the bill, and then we'll go to any amendments.
Well, Mr. Chair, between both bills, I was given a target, and I appreciate that from leadership about $400 million more than was spent in the last biennium. But just regarding the higher education bill, you know, we listened for the first, I think, five meetings about from students all over the state and in different institutions, the privates and publics, about the cost of tuition and the debt they're going into, and we tried to meet those concerns, and you know, we put about almost $46 million for the MinSU system for tuition, and about $24 million at the University of Minnesota, and required a match at the university for a new scholarship program that's geared more towards even more towards middle-income Minnesotans, and we bought down the tuition at the campuses in Morris and Crookston and Duluth. So they were more in line with the Twin Cities campuses, and on that program I told you about, where we gave $7 million to the university. I at first was going to put it in tuition and mandate a decrease, but, you know, they have their independence, so they say, and so we put $7 million towards this new scholarship program that they promised to raise a 2-to-1 match for. We fully funded the request for inflation. We between new state dollars of about almost $13 million, and reallocation in the state grant program, we pump about $60 million into that system, which serves more students and provides larger living and miscellaneous expenses for them, and buys down the student responsibility by half a percentage point. So there's a lot of good things in the higher education bill, and I meet my target, Mr. Chair, so I appreciate your support.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Chairman, this came from Madam Chair down in the Tax Committee, but Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, when you get to the GI bill for veterans, does that follow any past? I think in the past there's been a state similar. I know the feds had one. I don't know if they still do or not. Is this a continuation of, or a brand new plan, or something? Or?
Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, it's a brand new plan, and the governor had asked for 15 and 15. I put in 10 and 10. I think the Senate is 5 each year, or 5 and 5. They have to use at least their, you know, the impression with the governor's office is that they would try to use all available GI. Federal GI money first, and then they come in on this program, and it's geared toward those families who lose a loved one in battle, that they would, the family members would be able to go. I think this will cover the cost of the program, but, you know, the governor had a little higher estimates, but I think that this is going to do it based on what we're seeing maybe it's anecdotal evidence in Wisconsin that their program is a little cheaper than what the governor suggested, and they have more GIs. So we'll see what happens with it. I'm more than willing to revisit it if we need be, but, you know, even the GIs that were coming with the students that have not been in the military were telling me, I'm doing okay, please take care of these younger folks and those that have lost their jobs and had to be retrained before, you know, I don't need the help. I remember two different GIs telling me that, so we still didn't put a significant amount of money, Representative Earhart, but it'll be after they exhaust what's available to them federally.
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that we're hitting on the same question I'm asking. I just was wondering if we at one time had an offset or something, continuation of the federal GI Bill when that lapsed or came to an end for an individual. The state would continue for a while. Is this a resurrection of that, or is this a brand new plan? And this isn't just for widows and so forth. It's for also for active veterans coming back from the service. And there are a number of offsets. I understand all that. But I was just curious as if this is something that has been lingering without funding, or if this is some new creation. Or
Chair, this is a new creation.
Representative
Earhart, and you're probably thinking of those bonuses we used to give our National Guard people and things like that.
Yeah.
This is brand new, piggyback on top of the federal money, brand new type program. That's why we don't know what it costs. And your guess is as good as mine, and I gave two-thirds of what the governor had guessed, and the attorney general had a program and plan, and that was cheaper, and Wisconsin has a plan that where I said where they have more GIs coming back, but put less money in, and it seems to cover everybody. So it's a brand new program, and I think this should cover the cost.
Paul, okay?
No? Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Holberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rukavina. It's my understanding that there's a fee on building permits in this bill, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, that's in the other bill that got split up, so it's in the workforce development portion. Oh, there's a fee also for contractors, if that's what you're asking. There's a fee for that construction community, and I'm talking the owners in the construction. This trade, not the union, came in their having trouble finding people to go into construction management, so they had a fee in here that will fund a new program that through the MNSCU system that is creating construction management fee that's been agreed to by all parties, from what I understand. There doesn't seem to be any problem with it.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, can you tell me what the cost would be on a $60 million high school?
Mr. Burke, can you help me? A quarter mil or 25 cents, whichever is greater on a building permit.
And Mr. Chair, how much is a quarter mil on $60 million?
Representative of
Representative Gunter is good with numbers, although he sometimes he isn't.
I think it was 15,000.
Mr. Chair, what was the answer?
I'm sorry, Representative Rukavina.
I don't know the answer, and neither does my fiscal analyst. Representative Gunter's taking a stab at it.
I'm going to take a stab at $15,000, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Rukavina, the biggest building projects occurring in my district are all publicly funded buildings, whether it's a new police station or new junior high, new high school. Was there any thought given to exempting this fee on publicly funded buildings?
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, in my district, most of the buildings going up are in the same boat as yours. They're public institutions, and you hope that you have a good manager on those projects to save money in the long run, and I think that's exactly what the, whether they're Carl Sanderson or a Ryan Construction or whatever is concerned with, that you have people that are capable of managing these construction projects, keeping on budget and on time, and they're running out of those types of people, and so that's what this is hoping to do. This is not an initiative brought by me or the building trades or anybody else, although Representative Melton, who's in the room, carries a bill, but it was brought forth by the construction industry itself and the big players in the construction industry, Representative Holbert, to find people that are capable of running these projects and getting them done as inexpensively for the taxpayers possible.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe in the next year we can see a fee on hospital bills to generate more interest in meeting our needs for additional nurses. I mean, I think that this is not a good idea. It's not a matter of policy to put a fee like this, especially to fund, you know, I think it's bad policy, and I don't think it's a road we want to go down, putting surcharges on particular business endeavors in order to fund higher education opportunities. I would hope that our institutions would be monitoring the market needs and responding to those. But the fee that I'm really interested in is the fee on the hockey tickets. I can't. This is Minnesota. We're going to have a fee on hockey tickets now?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Holbert, well, you know, I could sit here, I guess, and we'll wait for the floor because I think I got the votes here today. But, you know, you want to talk about surcharges. They've been surcharges under your, you know, majority rule on everything from parking tickets to seatbelt violations to, I can't even imagine, you know, I mean, a few years back, I know Representative LaForest isn't on here, but he was concerned about this quarter. I can tell you what kind of fees and funding gets put in place. The Hockey Hall of Fame is a national enshrinement. It's the national hall and museum for United States hockey. I don't think we have other than, I think Representative, Representative Poppy on this committee. The only other thing we figured we had a national museum for was spam. So, in the state of Minnesota. So I thought that the hockey community would be okay with this, and so far I've run it by the university, and Minsky knows it's in the bill, and I haven't gotten any feedback against it. In fact, Mr. Sauer, who was the head coach at both Wisconsin and Colorado College, is on the Hockey Hall of Fame board and was going to bring it next weekend. It'll be a weekend from this weekend, or maybe it is this coming weekend, to the WCHA, and he thinks it's a good idea. So, you know, we have fees on a lot of things. We also, when I checked on the museums we're funding, you got, or other things, you know, you've got the Minnesota Zoo at almost $13 million a year, and the Como Zoo and the Duluth Zoo get over $250,000, and the Minnesota Science Museum gets $1.5 million. The Metropolitan Council gets $3.3 million, and the Inventors Congress gets $120,000. The Bell Museum at the university gets $335,000. The Minnesota Agricultural Interpretive Center gets $400,000. So there's a lot of fees and, I mean, appropriations. I had Mr. Geltman, my committee administrator, he's done an excellent job, by the way, for my committee, and he went and he called up at the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, and they just received a $40 million appropriation in 2002 from the Massachusetts legislature to build a new facility. The NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, it just got $400,000 last year, and the year before got $1.6 million from the legislature. The Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, got $2.2 million in 2004. So I could go on and on, but the best one like is the Golf Hall of Fame, which gets a $2 million a year annual appropriation from the Florida legislature, and the the Florida also has the International Game and Fish Association Fishing Hall of Fame, which gets about $800,000. So, I think it's...
And Mr. Chair, if you want to have a direct appropriation, great, and let's talk about it, but... nothing's safe anymore in Minnesota if we're putting fees on hockey tickets.
Representative Rukavina, just a sec. I think my staff informs me this is actually in the next bill.
Well,
it's okay to do it as long as you don't discuss about it in the next bill.
Okay. I won't, I promise.
Okay. Representative Holbrook.
That's it, Mr. Chair. I'm just... Okay. As a hockey mom, and that was just rather shocking to me, I guess.
Representative McNamara, remember we're talking about something that's not before us right now.
Just as long as we're going to get it done. Representative Rukavina, I thought, if I remember right, in the conference committee on, of all things, it was the university football stadium last year, I thought Senator Thomasoni or somebody put something in that, didn't we do some funding for the Hockey Hall of Fame in that bill, or am I...
Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
And Representative McNamara, and I think Representative Sertis had a lot to do with it too, but we are so very grateful that after giving $9 million or almost $10 million a year of state general fund money to the university for a new football stadium, and I don't know how you voted on it, that you let us spend a little bit of our property tax money, and we had to come to the legislature to do that. $75,000 a year in taconite taxes, but it required a match. And there hasn't been a match so far, but thank you so much for letting us little indentured servants up on the Iron Range spend our own money, $75,000 a year, so you could spend $10 million at the university's football stadium. We appreciate that.
Would you like to ask another question, Representative?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, I'll have more questions later.
I'm looking forward to it, believe me, because I've got some ammunition that would take the wind out of it.
That's Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, have any of the four institutions complained about this quarter yet?
Representative Rukavina?
No. Thank you, Representative Gunther.
Okay, remember, this is an issue that's not even before us yet. Okay? But we won't have any discussion. Any other discussion on this issue that's not before us? Okay, good. We have an amendment. We've talked with the author. I think it's Representative Aver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Aver.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, and I think it's a tribute to the committee's focus on finance compared to policy. That it's the A1 amendment that was just written this morning. So I would like to move that, and just the actual decision on the bill is before us, and I've not talked with the Representative Rukavina, and I will talk to him about it later, about this matter. You may have read in the paper, or you may have gotten emails, relative to the Minneapolis community and Technical College, relative to these sinks, which were meant to be respectful of the people who practice the Muslim faith, which I think is an idea that is, I have no trouble with that at all, personally. I think that we need to respect everybody's faith. This table may or may not agree with that statement about the sinks being appropriate or not, and that's not the point of my amendment. The point is that we are truly a melting pot of many faiths, and many of us have, in different generations have come over with what we brought with us from our cultures. What happens as we accommodate some faiths, other ones seem to have a harder time being accommodated. And in the discussion about the sinks comes up with the parallel discussion, which is some people who have had the audacity to tell people Merry Christmas, or had a little Christmas music playing, or done some other symbols of their personal faith, have been challenged about that. And I find that to be a problem. And the purpose of this statement in the first part of the amendment is to simply say that the cubicle in your private area, in this case Minsky, but it should be statewide at every public institution, is your space. And the same way the UN has their own offices that they can do what they want, their kind of country, a space that's under their control, that people should be allowed to express their personal faith on the walls of their cubicle and in passing as they go about their business, and that we would all mutually respect that. The second part of the amendment, which makes it a fiscal amendment, Mr. Chair, creates a penalty, which would be used then for cultural and spiritual awareness training. those institutions that don't happen to find that to be something they're able to do. Mr. Chair, this is a work in progress. I've been talking to MNCU. They're being very accommodating to me. This is a matter, though, that is provoked by the news about the installation of these fixtures and so on, but I think goes beyond that, not even about the fixtures, merely about why wouldn't you let them have fixtures and why wouldn't you respect their faith if another group wanted them. But also those groups that don't want fixtures, that have other needs in there to express their own faith, be it Christianity in some way, the Jewish faith or other faiths that are this country is known for and that we're known for our freedom to express. So, Mr. Chair, you've been very kind to allow me to express these thoughts. This will be a work in progress. I expect there's something to put onto the floor, but this is not for today, and I respect your time. Thank you very much.
Representative Abreu withdraws Amendment A1. Any other amendments before us? I don't have any other amendments. Any other discussion on this bill? If not, then the... Oh, I'm sorry. There are two amendments. Two.
I have my amendments. Mr. Chair?
I think this is the only of the ones that we have before the higher education bill. Then the chair would renew his motion that 1989 be recommended to pass. And placed on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is for the general registry. The motion is adopted. Get it right, Jeff. Okay, Representative Rukavina, then. The Jobs and Economic Development Bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm not on the committee, so if you'd move.
Chair would move that Senate File 2089 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. Members, we have within it the spreadsheet. Representative Rukavina, you were given a target for this part of your development also. You would ask the question, are you within your target?
Mr. Chair, I am, but I accept that I have to offer an amendment.
We will offer the amendment to make sure that the bill reflects the spreadsheet. Right. Within the spreadsheet itself, Representative Rukavina, you're within your target?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, I think you have in your packet Amendment S208986. And then this is on the second part of that page 2, you will see the additional that needs to be done to be able to balance this out and put him within his target with this particular provision. Representative Rugabina, I've moved the amendment. I want to explain it. Is there anything more than just that?
Mr. Chair, this was inadvertently left out. It's in the governor's bill that Representative Gunther carried, and it was just left out of the bill that the fee for the Bureau of Mediation Services was be in there. So we need this language for that.
Okay. Then all those in favor of the A6 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. There are a couple other amendments that's being passed out. have both of these passed out before we proceed. And Representative McNamara, I do not know whose are offering these. Representative Gunther, they're yours. Okay. Representative Gunther, which one would you like to take first?
Mr. Chairman, since we have the A7 amendment already passed out, we'll take that one first.
Okay. Representative Gunther moves the amendment entitled S2089A7. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This deletes Section 24 that exempts the first $10,000 of severance from computing unemployment benefits if they make less than $75,000. The bill excludes the first $10,000 of any amount of severance pay, bonus pay, sick pay, and any payment paid to an employee with annual salaries or wages under $75,000 from lowering unemployment benefits when an employee is laid off. This charge will cost the unemployment insurance fund, which could trigger the higher rates for businesses. Now, what we're basically saying, folks, if we exempt the first $10,000, the action precipitated from this will be that employees will no longer voluntarily offer severance pay, and that in total the employee will be ripped off. Secondly, if we leave the severance pay in the package to begin with, the employee has a longer period of time in which they can collect the benefits that they are having with unemployment. So we'll not precipitate any lengthy extensions or desire or willingness to have an extension, because they are being paid right along with severance pay. And that's basically why I want to eliminate this section. I think it's to the benefit of the employee as well as the employer, and it will precipitate more employers offering severance pay and sick pay and things like that.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I hope you oppose the amendments. Representative Gunther, there's 13 other states that have similar language. There's certainly no empirical evidence that they offer less benefits or severance than we have in Minnesota. In fact, members, we had a severance offset until about 10 years ago. I think it's totally unfair that somebody that's worked for Ford Motor Company for 25, 30 years of their lives, or in the case of my constituents, 20 years up at Ainsworth, that gets a bonus, they got to spend it all before they get to collect unemployment insurance. It does cost the fund about $11, $12 million, I believe, annually. The fund is getting replenished. If that's if every single person that has a severance didn't go back to work and took advantage of it, which won't happen. And members, to me, it's a fairness issue. Representative Gunther, you know, in committee we had a lot of discussion. The fact that a lot of people that got severance packages and got laid off from Ford didn't even get to qualify for unemployment compensation or didn't get to collect it. And those many had to use up part of their severance to get it. So, members, I'd hope for a no vote.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If 13 states like it this way, that means 37 don't. I'd always like to err in the way of the 37 instead of 13. Furthermore, if you look at those people from Ford Motor Company, their 26 weeks of unemployment, their normal 26 weeks, happen after this is expended, so they will have a higher likelihood of collecting for a longer period of time. I look at people that are of elder age, they will be able to float right into the latter years and not have to worry about taking a job. And I talked to several of those people.
Representative Rukavina.
Sure. I just hope you vote no, and it's a fairness issue. And my friends on the Democratic Farmer Labor Party will kind of vote for the working person.
Other discussion? If not, then Representative Gunther renews his motion at S 2089A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. And the motion does not pass. Representative Gunther, you have the A8 amendment as well?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gunther moves the amendment titled S2089A8. Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, this simply deletes the new meat packer worker. I have a terrible time with this. Ombudsman provision. Today, meat packing plants throughout Minnesota, as well throughout the country, are getting safer, are having fewer work comp claims, and fewer injuries every year. This is not just in Minnesota, this is nationwide. And basically what we want to do is simply omit this provision, and Nebraska is the only state that has it. If we thought Nebraska was so great, we'd have a unicameral legislature. However, I think this is something that every meatpacking management team tries to promote safety throughout their plants, and they're doing better and better job of that. So they don't need somebody else coming in there and looking for reasons to stop their progress. So I urge members for the 320 meatpacking plants in Minnesota to vote this amendment.
Representative Rukavina.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I see nothing wrong with trying to train people to do things safely in the workplace and report things that aren't and maybe save some worker comp claims and things like that. So I hope you vote no against this. Again, I appreciate the fact that last time, along with my friends on the Democratic Farm Labor Party, the independent Republican over there voted with me, I think.
It's good to have a bipartisan vote. Representative Gunther, are you finished?
I am finished.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, how is this program funded?
Representative Rukavina?
Workers' comp fund, special comp fund, and workers' compensation at the Department of Labor and Industry.
Representative McNamara, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Rukavina, if I remember, having spent 30 years as an employer, one of our most important costs to control was workers' compensation because it was experience modified. That if you did a good job at controlling your costs, you paid a lower premium. So would not the meat packers naturally want to do a good job with this, that their work comp would be modified if they're doing a good job? Why would we need the government to get involved and be assessing another penalty on another government program when actually they've already are incentivized with their own workers' compensation insurance to do a good job? And I think, as Representative Gunther has noted, we have come a long, long ways in the meat packing industry in our safety record. And I think the statistics would show that meat packing today is much safer than it was in the generation that I remember as a youth with the South St. Paul meat packing plant.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
You know, this is coming out of the general revenue, I guess, for lack of a better word. The workers' compensation fund has nothing to do with their experience rating or anything like that. And I'm hoping that to save them money, if they're, you know, that with this type of training and reporting and that we can get things done right so people don't get hurt on the job and it eventually saves them money. That's the theory behind using that $100,000 there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Backman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, maybe I misunderstood you. How is it funded? How is this program, your proposed program, funded?
There's the Workers' Compensation Fund at the Department of Labor and Industry, which now, for instance, money comes out of there. I think in this bill there's money for the Vinland, is it Vinland? Vinland foundation to help rehabilitate people that comes out of this fund that's already there, Representative McNamara. And I don't know how the assessment is levied. I'm not that much of an expert on how it's levied, but it doesn't. This money will not be, you know, it's hopefully going to lower people's workers' comp payments instead of increase them. And there's a number of other safety programs, et cetera, that are funded out of this fund. But maybe.
Representative Rukavina, I did get the answer. I thought it comes from the 0.1% that all employers pay out of the workforce dislocated worker. It doesn't come out of there?
There's nothing to do with the dislocated worker.
Okay, then
the assessment on your unemployment assessment and that feeling that you hit on unemployment insurance payments that has nothing to do with that workforce development fund.
Of
the special workers' comp fund at the Department of Labor and Industry.
Representative McNamara,
which funds a lot at the Department of Labor and Industry. Their general fund appropriation is not very big. Their workers' comp assessments, which fund a lot of different things, is where this money comes from.
Representative McNamara.
So it's a general fund appropriation is where it comes from?
No.
Representative Rukavina.
No, it isn't, Mr. Chair. No, it isn't, Representative McNamara, but I'm telling you, at the Department of Labor and Industry, a lot of their employees, a lot of their programs are funded by workers' compensation assessment, and that's where this money's coming from. It's not coming out of workforce development money at all.
Okay,
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my original point, Representative Rukavina, was right. It's coming from employers on their workers' compensation premium. This $100,000, we're not just grabbing it out of the sky. It's being assessed to worker comp premiums. Is that right? That's what I originally thought.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative McNamara, we're grabbing it out of Dolly's sky, which is already coming there, and we're not increasing the assessment. It's already there, and we're just taking a little bit of it so they don't spend it on something else. In this bill, I think it's a doubling of the money going to the Veterans Center for, I think it doubles it. I think it goes from $100,000 a year or biennium to $200,000 to help people that are hard to get back to work after they have an injury. So there's all kinds of programs being funded with this money that goes to Dolly now. And so this is not any increase in the workers' comp premium.
Okay, Representative Gunther, you?
I'm satisfied.
Okay. Any other questions? We have Representative Gunther then would renew his motion that S2089A8 be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
The motion is not adopted. Other amendments? The motion does not prevail. I'll get it down right there.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Sir, I'd really like Representative Gunther to be on my conference committee, but I got to see how his lips move here.
There'll probably be a better indication on the floor whether it's red or green. Other discussion on the bill? If not, then the chair would move that Senate file 2089, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
And carried.
Thank you, member.
Members, a couple of things. We were able to get the copy of the Health and Human Services bill before us. The amendments that will be offered are being prepared or copied.
I might need you.
But as you know, this is kind of a complicated bill. In addition, fiscal staff is working on the spreadsheet that we need to have, making sure that it's correct, and getting copies made. It may be a little bit before that happens, but in consulting, you can please, in consulting with Representative Holberg,
even though we don't have everything, all the amendments before us yet or the spreadsheet, it's our desire to go forward and start asking some questions about the bill, if that's okay.
Yep.
Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair, do you know, are there bill summaries available? I mean, I'm flipping here looking for some sections. I found some in the 300 range, but...
Well, why don't we check on that as well? Staff will go up and see if there's... going to reconvene. Ways and Means Committee, called back to order. Would the pages be so kind as to pass out the bill summary? And right at the present time, we have enough for every other person. Representative Holbrook, you have a copy of that for
a while,
and we will allow... giving the people an opportunity to look at that as well. We are running off additional copies too. But I only learned in my early life to have invented Xerox. Or paper, one or the other.
Did you get my emails in there?
On what?
They are also in the process of copying the spreadsheet.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I've come back.
And that'll be a short while before that gets copied. But to start the process, Representative Holbrook, if it's okay, because start at least with some questions, and then we'll handle amendments later on. Representative Huntley moves that Senate File 2171 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. Representative Huntley, the spreadsheet is not before us yet, so I will ask the question that I ask all the time later on. But why don't you at least give us just a very, very quick overview of the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is the Omnibus Health and Human Services Finance Bill, and I will say that there were three different bills that got put into this bill on Saturday, I guess. And there's some interactions that we hadn't anticipated, so that the dollars didn't work out quite right. And one of the things in Representative Slawick's part of this bill had increased some file fees, and we had put money in our budget or some eligibility in ours. Well, we didn't accommodate that increase. So staff's been working close to around the clock to get this ready, and hopefully I'll be able to answer your questions about our way in target by in about a half an hour. This is, as I said, the Health and Human Services bill. It is a huge bill. It spends roughly $10 billion for the biennium. I'm sure it will come up later. There are some rather dramatic increases in some of these accounts. And we'll discuss that later, I think. There should be a handout for that as well. Because it looks like the governor's budget had an increase over the 2006-2007 of about 16%, and this bill is about 19.5% above the money that we spent last year. And this is a sort of a complicated thing, because in this bill, some of the accounts are forecasted for inflation and some aren't. So it's very difficult to really say what's how much the increase it is and how much it isn't. There are features in this bill that lead to covering all kids with health insurance. There's some dramatic health care reform initiatives. There is money for the pandemic flu, a little over $6 million now. There is about $45 million for a mental health initiative, which in what's in this bill is kind of a mix of Representative Greiling's approach and the governor's approach. There is a COLA for all long-term care and nursing homes, and that is 3% of 3%. And if you want to know what 3% is, it's $138 million in this biennium and $255 million in the next biennium. One of the better things in this bill, I'm a little disappointed that it's going to start later, but we are looking at nursing home rates and rebasing them so that we'll look at the cost of each home and attempt to raise their reimbursements to fit what their costs are. That starts in 2010. And let's see. We have, since I just went to the dentist last week, we have $10 million, for, as the governor wanted, for critical access to dentistry, which to me is I can't understand how kids can live with teeth aching for months at a time. So we have $10 million, as the governor proposed in this. And in the healthcare reform area, we have a lot of what we hope are cost containment issues. Again, we have a mix of things the governor wanted. We have his 125 plans in this bill, and we have his insurance exchange in this bill. We have a number of features he had to provide reimbursement to different groups that are going to manage chronic disease. And as you learned in the committee time and time again, that the real money you can save in health care is coordinating the care of people that have chronic illnesses. With that, maybe I should offer my amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think we're trying to see where your amendment is, but I know yours is an amendment that brings it back into the spreadsheet, but we don't have copies of the spreadsheet yet, so I'd like to just hold off on offering that amendment before we do that. But the pages, if it's copied, can indeed pass it on. Representative Holberg, you want to add some questions? Representative Dean, I'm not sure. Other questions first.
Mr. Chair, I have questions that I know that Representative Dean has a couple amendments, but I don't know if they're here yet. So,
Mr. Chair, I would like to just hold off until we get the spreadsheets before us, before we offer amendments, if that's okay. So if we could do the questions for a bit, I think the spreadsheet will be here very shortly. Mr. Chair. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Huntley. Could you talk a little bit, one of the changes in this bill as it moves through the process is the rebasing that you brought up a little bit. Could you talk a little bit about what the changes are in rebasing for the nursing homes throughout the state and how that changes? Are there tiers and what are the differentiations between one area from the next within this rebasing proposal that you have and where that lands in the bill and how much it costs?
Representative Huntley, the cost is in the next biennium, and I think it's on the order of $12 million. And what we're going to do in 2010 is pay for 25% of the total cost of rebasing. In 2011, we'll increase that to 35% of what the rebasing was, and in 2012 go to 100% of the rebasing. There still are some statistical, there are some peer groups geographically around the state that are still in this bill, but there's been an attempt to try to move a large number of counties into areas in which their labor market is the same as the center of their labor. For instance, those around St. Cloud, those around the metro area, those around Rochester are attempting to do that. What the rebasing does is, and by the way, this has not been done since 93. We ought to do it every 2 years, and it hasn't been done since 93. And what you do when you rebase is you go into each individual site, look at what their costs are, try to judge whether those costs are reasonable, and then reimburse them at that rate that affects reflects their costs. Ultimately, I mean, this is going to start in 2010. I think the legislature is going to have to monitor how this is going on, because there still are some regional differences that would be allowed. It looks at the labor market in each part of the state. As you know, I've been kind of critical of that, since most of us, I would use the example of Faribault. There's not a nurse in Faribault that wouldn't drive 20 miles so she could make $5 more an hour, which is what happens in the current situation. So those kinds of things need to be addressed. I wish we could have addressed it this year. We can't, but we're going to start phasing it in 2010.
Thank you.
Representative Dean, follow up. Are you okay?
Oh, sorry.
Representative Abler had his hand up. Representative Abler asked now or forever be ignored.
Thank you, Ed. Sounds like my house.
Representative Abler.
And I, or other members who spend time on this topic, are aware that there's been some changes in the federal law about work participation, and the governor and the Senate and the House, all different ways of approaching the likelihood we're going to lose $26 million. I'm not sure if the chair of the committee knows about that, but this is a matter of concern to me. And at the end of the day, whatever that day is, it seems like most states aren't going to comply and hit that target to rescue themselves. And I know the governor's proposal was hoping to get close to compliance. And so I think that this would be worth spending a minute talking about that to the committee, for Representative Huntley and you to just bring us up to speed as a committee so we know what next year we might be facing.
I would like to have Representative Huntley and not the you.
So would he yield to talk about that?
Representative Huntley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Abler. This is a serious problem. The state could be hit with $26 million in reduction in our TANF money if we don't meet the work participation rates that the federal government requires. The governor has an initiative in here to partly address that, and that's in this bill, and that's to take some families that we know are probably never going to be in the workforce, and because of a variety of disabilities, mental illness, other severe problems, we know that they just aren't going to get into the workforce. And so what the governor is doing, and I support, is transferring them out of the MFIT program into another program which is completely funded with state money, so that then those families will not be counted against our work participation rate. There's a whole bunch of other things in this bill that try to address the federal mandates, and I was going to say the taking those people out of the regular MFIP or TANF program is a cost of about $3 million in the first year and $5 million in the second year of finance. So there's a significant amount of money that we're putting up with state tax dollars to try to avoid the federal penalty in our TANF money. There are other things we need to do, and trying to get the work participation rate up is difficult. But I think the things that the government proposed and that the ones that the House Democrats have proposed will encourage people to participate in the workforce.
Representative Abrams.
Just a follow-up. Then, Representative Huntley, do you have an idea about how close this bill is going to get to that target of avoiding the penalty?
Representative Huntley.
I can't answer that question directly. I know that there will be an attempt, and as you said, probably only one or two states are going to meet that quota, and it's, I think, unlikely that the federal government will actually impose those penalties. But we still need to try to meet their criteria, and we are doing it. And we're putting at least $8 million of state money into that program to get those particular families out of the unfit program.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Holford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, can you tell me if the Minnesota Department of Health Disease Surveillance Modernization Program is in your bill, and if so, where is it located?
It's in this bill, and I assume it's Department of Health, Article 6. And I don't know if is somebody from the Department of Health? It starts at least on section 14, where it this would be on page 48 of the bill summary, and section 14. Just have to comment, we have a 94-page bill summary.
I know, and I've been trying to scream through it here as well, and I'm having problems locating a lot of this stuff that I wanted to ask questions about. On page 298, this was the Minnesota Health Records Act that Representative Thiessen carried. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Representative.
And in the bill as it currently exists, is there any funding for this program?
Representative Huntley.
They're shaking their heads. There's no funding for this. Most of what's in this section of the bill is simply changing language and rewriting the same thing. There's very little new that's actually in that.
Mr. Chair, this section of law contains something new called a record locator service, in which medical personnel would be able to access this record locator service in order to find out where there's health data on individuals. And as the bill was introduced, there was no opt-in or ability to opt out for individuals as far as being included in this locator service. Is that still the standard that's included in this bill, or did you allow for an opt-in provision?
Representative is out, I believe. Representative Thiessen is here. Representative Holbrook, are you satisfied with the answer?
Mr. Chair, maybe Representative Thiessen can
to the table and
be a little more efficient here.
Sure. Representative Holbrook, would you restate the question for Representative Thiessen?
Representative Thiessen, on this Health Records, Minnesota Health Records Act, has the language been changed so that an individual would have to give consent in order for their records to be part of the locator service?
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we spent a lot of time on this issue in committee. As it currently stands, a provider or could put the, and just so everybody's clear what is we're talking about here, a provider could put into the health record the RLS, the record locator service, the fact that he has records for you without your consent. It would not be a medical record that is there, but your name would be there with the name of the provider. But we have other provisions in the bill that would have a pretty strong opt-out language. So if your provider comes to you and says, I would like to access these records, you could tell him, no, I don't want you to do that, first of all, and secondly, and I want you to get my records out of there, send into the record locator services. I want my name eliminated. The other thing that's important members understand about this is that no one can access the record locator service without your consent. And I think that's another important point that needs to be made. What this is really used for is your own doctor to go and say, where are these patients' medical records? You could go there, and he could access this record locator service and find out that you have records at these places, and then he would have to contact those folks with your consent to get the records from those people. So there's consent all the way along the way here. And we've also put in the bill through the course of these hearings, and it's tightened up a lot as we've gone through the hearings. It specifically says the government can't get at this record locator service. It specifically says only providers can. So insurance companies can't, your employer can't, only providers can get into it, and only with your consent. That was a long answer to say no, there. It is an opt-in. It's an opt-out, not an opt-in.
Okay. And so can you just real quickly tell me where it says the government doesn't have access to this?
Representative Stephen?
If someone could point to me approximately where in the bill the health record.
Article 6, Section 14.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stephen, it starts on 298.
Let's see. Line 21 on page 303. You're asking about the Department of Health. And then on 22 it says only a provider may access the record locator. So page 303, lines 21 through 23.
President Holberg, did you see that as well?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in other words, you're saying there's no money in this bill to provide any disease surveillance?
Not as part of the Health Records Act.
Right.
And I don't know all the other provisions.
Right. And my understanding, I'm familiar with the Health Records Act, but I was wondering if there's a thing that the Minnesota Department of Health is trying to work on to provide for electronic records. And they called it the Disease Surveillance Modernization on their information sheet.
And Mr. Chair, I think that would be better addressed to one of the other people sitting at the table because it's not my legislation. If that's all right with Representative Holberg. Maybe
certainly. My understanding is there's a $4 million appropriation in this bill for this disease surveillance modernization. And I had a whole day to read this in the survey. I might be able to find it, but
getting a little help here. It's on page 526, and it's $2 million each year, and it is for modernization of their system. As I understand it, Mr. Chairman and Representative Holberg, the department has a system that doesn't sync with a lot of the other electronic systems that are out there. They have been trying to modernize it, and that's what that addresses.
And
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and members, I guess what I'm concerned about is, I don't know, for those of you that were around in 2002 when the health department started to go through a rulemaking process in order that they have access to individual medical records, and there was a huge public outcry against that measure. Sitting in statute in the salmon piece of the paper that were passed out to you is current law that does not require consent for the commissioner to put together this type of data system. Now, 5 years later, maybe they think everybody forgot about what happened in 2002. We're putting money into this bill to allow the health department to work on compiling private health records electronically. So we have the collection law in place, and now we're going to give them some money, and it doesn't look, other than just a rider with some money, it doesn't look like we have any new controls on the use of this. And so I'm just wondering if the bill authors can give me some assurances that patients are actually going to have control of their medical records and that we're not setting up a system similar to the record locator service in which it's nearly impossible for individuals to have control over their records unless they're very good at seeking out
forms or information held behind the desk and read every little bit of information that their providers put for them when they check into the office.
Representative Park, are you answering this question?
Yeah, I'll try. I'm not quite sure what Representative Holberg is referring to, but this isn't a new thing. This is the mandatory reporting we have in the state right now, as I understand it, before I was just talking with Health for TB, childhood lead poisoning, cancer, and infectious diseases. We have had those for a long, long time. This isn't anything new. And this is to update the system of being able to communicate about that electronically. It has been, I guess they chose a system, if I recall from the testimony, they chose a system that wasn't in sync with the rest of the...
Okay,
that's the systems that out there that want to communicate with them. So the, on the federal level, and it is required by our federal, it is federal compliance issue.
Okay,
and what's someone from the health department to talk about? We have someone here.
No, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I appreciate that clarification. I think maybe in the meantime, I'll work on some language to make sure that we don't have expansion, but rather just an upgrade of a current collection system. We don't put the Department of Health in the, give them the ability to put together a large electronic medical record collection system that goes beyond what they're currently doing. Because when you look at 62J, they do have the authority in law to collect a lot of information without parent consent and have it move forward with that. But I think we need to watch for that. Mr. Chair, if I might, a couple other questions on the newborn screening program that's on page 428. There's a $40 increase in the fee for that. Who will pay for that?
Representative Park?
Page 428. Yes. Are you talking about a screening, newborn screening?
Mr. Chair, it's on line 28 of page 428.
Yes. Representative Stark.
Yes, that is an additional. I presume health insurance companies and others will be picking it up, but yes, it does go to the...
And Mr. Chair, Representative Park, is this to cover the cost of the new hearing screening, or is there an additional charge for that as well?
My understanding is the major increase, I think $20 of that was... to cover the newborn screening, and I think another $20 is a general increase to cover the blood spot test, just to make sure that everything is paid for.
Okay, Representative Holberg.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that clarification.
Representative Aver?
Well, actually, just back to the point of the health records business and the 62J, I think that members would be well advised to read the SAM and Bell College 62J321. This was a huge deal, and I think the testifiers and members are correct in what they said, that there's no language to expand that, but I just want to remind people that the more tools that they have, the more this can be put into effect. And this is one rule away from being implemented, and the department didn't do it last time because they abandoned the rules because of Representative Haas and others made a huge stink about it. It would have cost a lot of money to collect the information that they wanted, and they didn't even know what they would do with it when they got it. But I think it becomes a policy question, so that we want to be sure that as a legislature, as a House, we're on top of that to make sure that that stays in the constraints that we approve it to be. And I, for one, remain uncomfortable with this law standing out there with being one rule away from being done through some expedited process, maybe even someday. So.
Well, and Mr. Chair, to that point, we also have, and I can't even tell you which bill it is anymore, programs in which we give authority for health information. It might even be in this bill as far as for environmental health issues and to share health data between different state agencies, like PCA, et cetera, to try and track health trends. And so... I mean, I just think we need to be really careful in this computer age that we have, like Representative Abler said, we have this law on the books that allows for very private information to be collected, and then we're passing laws that allow state agencies to share information amongst themselves, and if we don't watch it, we're going to go much farther than we think.
Representative Aber?
No.
Additional information? Representative Colbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions at all? Any other questions at all? We have not dealt with any of the amendments yet, so an opportunity for questions. Yeah.
No. Oh my God.
Members, you were passed out one of the spreadsheets, and fiscal staff is checking with some other things for me.
Representative Dean has indicated there's a verbal amendment, and let's go to that one first, and then we'll be handling some of the other amendments. Representative Dean, I'll call on you for a verbal amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We're going to keep our amendments very brief, and they will all be directed somewhat to a similar theme, that which is the very, very distinct differences between the governor's plan and our caucus's perception of a market-based system and the direction that this bill is moving, which is a very, very hard right turn or hard left turn towards single-payer medicine in Minnesota. The best example of that was an amendment that was put in. It was actually Representative Chumper's bill that was added in as an amendment in the health finance committee. It's Article 7, Section 61, page 375.
I'm sorry.
It's Article 7, Section 61 on page 375. And what this does is it sets up a commission paid for by the Minnesota Department of Health to essentially say that we should move towards a single-payer system in the state of Minnesota, which would be the most abrupt change in health policy in our state's history. We have the healthiest state in the country, we have the least number of uninsured in the country, and what that is based upon has been the hardworking doctors, researchers, and folks in Minnesota. What this would do is move in a completely different direction, 180 degrees, and setting up a system of single-payer health care in Minnesota. And if you looked at the commission and the way it was set up in the health bill, it was actually a little bit more representative of the direction of this, which had representation completely from one side of the aisle, and also on also representing the unions that are pushing this. And the reason that I would like to delete in its entirety this section is because it is totally unnecessary. House File 1873 from Representative Bunn, which is a very, very well-crafted bill that talks about bringing in alternatives. This alternative, if you wanted to do single payer, it could just as easily be done in 1873, Representative Bunn's bill. Therefore, we think that this is not only it's not only superfluous, but it also is an indication of where this bill wants to go, which is single-payer health care run by the government. And we think it's both superfluous, unnecessary, and heads the bill in the wrong direction, and that's why we would like to see that deleted. Mr. Chair, I would like a roll call.
Representative Dean moves to amend Senate File 2171 on page 375, delete section 61. Members, you will notice, and the staff has also kind of indicated to this, that we have some different numbering systems. We would normally have this as page 375 is a numbering on the bottom, and the line number on the side. And in some of the bills that we've come through, it's been a traditional one, but we have a different numbering system, so sometimes our amendments don't look the same. So staff, Dean, can you just kind of explain what's happening? Kathy, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair and members, this numbering system is actually part of the revisor's new system that was first implemented last session. And if you think of the numbers along the left side as two columns, the left column is the page number and the right column is the line number. And that's the way it was under the old system, where the page number was only at the bottom and the line number along the left-hand side. This combines both of them, but the amendments are still drawn to reflect the page number at the bottom and the line number, which is the number after the decimal point.
Okay, we have the Dean oral amendment before us. Discussion. Roll call has been requested. Representative Chumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to speak against this motion, being that it was my bill. Representative Dean, the only thing predetermined about this study is the topic. If you look at the study report, you will note that all kinds of questions are being asked here to be studied that would span just about everything you can think of. And the results of those questions are not predetermined. That's the role of the study group. I would point out, too, that the governor, I believe, has three appointments to this. And, the Senate has some appointments. The wording on the makeup of the study group has changed about three or four times, and so I have to even look myself as to what it is right now. But, you know, the point of this was to have a study of the single-payer option, which seems to be missing most of the time when people are talking about health care reform. And, of course, it's just a study. It's not a bill or a law or anything, and whatever comes out of it will be dependent upon, or, you know, it still will depend on what the legislature next session wants to do with it. So, you know, it's simply to gain information, to put information together, and see what a single-payer or direct purchasing option looks like and whether or not it will be beneficial or could be beneficial to the state. So, I'd ask people to vote no on the amendment.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, this part of the bill received a hearing in the Health Policy Committee and passed. It was discussed in the Finance Division, changed somewhat, and passed. This language that's in here now is the language that came out of the Policy Committee. So at least twice, I don't know if Representative Chumper, how many other committees you went to, but it's been heard twice, passed both times in two different health and human services committees, and I urge you to vote against the amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, what particular language do you object to? Let's just look at the report. the appointments certainly look, I don't want to talk about what they were when it first came in, appointments look pretty broad to me, but what about the, what language do you object to with precipitating the direction in the report?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Penn, number one, if you just step back from the language a second and say, well, why are we studying this? No, just if you'll let me finish, Representative Kahn. Representative Bunn's commission has already said, why do we need to use precious resources from the Department of Health? They said in testimony in the Health Committee that they can afford to do two studies a year, and these were their two studies on why we need to have universal single-payer health care in Minnesota. I think if you look at the context of the way it's set up with the administration as it currently exists, we would have 9 Democrats and 3 Republicans if everybody voted according to their color of the jersey that they were wearing to set up this particular commission. And referring back to the way it was presented initially, it was even further skewed in incorporating the unions. And and if you look at the context of the way that this was set up, it did have a hearing in Finance Committee. Debate was actually stopped as the question was called, which I've never seen in my time, my short time here. I've not yet seen that, and this was forced through. So it was something that our side had a very, very serious opposition to, and was added in at the very last minute. I would ask why this report, if it is important, could not be done with Representative Bunn's committee, if there's anything wrong with that, and why the Department of Health shouldn't be studying things like bird flu and other more imminent problems that we have on why we need to set up a single-payer health care system.
Representative Carlson. Excuse me, a second. Can I interrupt a second?
Okay.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask you comment that as each of these bills have gone through, that we should be looking at the fiscal impact, and the amendment in the discussion is dealing with a purely policy question. Members on both sides of the aisle have abided by your request today that we deal with just the fiscal implications of the bill. And I would respectfully ask Representative Dean to consider the history of what other members have done on policy issues and state fiscal requirements, and we'd appreciate it if you would withdraw the amendment.
Representative Dean, Representative Carlson has stated it's been kind of the policy, but keep in mind at no time does the rules say that, and we've allowed amendments to be discussed. Representative Aber on the last one wanted it to be discussed and graciously withdrew his amendment as well. I cannot prevent you from going forward, but I think that we have been asking even our own members on our side to respect the policy as opposed to that. Representative Dean.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think that the Department of Health will probably, this is their only study, and will definitely have a cost impact on the Department of Health by having to complete this commission that we have to set up. I think we could probably understand what the vote would be if we were to do so now, so I will go ahead and respect your request to remove this, but I think that also it should be noted that the Republicans on the Health Committee felt that this was probably the way that this bill, that this was entered into this bill, was under very, very strong objection, and will continue to be so as we go downstream, and so we will probably pick up this discussion again on the floor.
And Dean, I expect there will be all kinds of discussions on the floor. Are you formally withdrawing your request?
Yes.
Representative Dean, thank you. I appreciate that. Some of the members of my caucus appreciate that, probably more than anybody else. We do have a spreadsheet before us. And members, this is a little bit unusual. But with
the spreadsheet that's before us are the changes. And I asked the fiscal staff to give me the total target fund. And the target at the present time, and I'll share this, I've got just one copy right now, share this with Representative Holberg as well. This is $3,672,000 over its target. So we have an amendment to bring it into its target. And it's the author's amendment, A4. Representative Huntley, would you be so kind as to move S2171A4? Representative Huntley.
I would move that, Mr. Chair, and this amendment has a number of things, most of which are technical, that if you look at the amendment, that first section called a report is really, they redid language that's already in the bill to make it more clear. The line that we're really talking about is line 125. And if you look at line 125, I would like to make an oral amendment. It should read page 483, line 20. And then delete. And what we're doing, that's the child support enforcement section. And so we're taking care of the overage in our target by deducting the $3 million $670,000 roughly from child support enforcement and getting down to $5,333,000 for that activity, and we're still $1,300,000 plus above the Senate on that item. That puts the bill in balance then.
So this bill will, this amendment gives us a balanced approach to your bill. Representative Huntley, you said yes. Representative Swigum.
Yes, sir. I noticed that you introduced the amendment as being $3+ million over your target. For those of us who consider maybe the target being the governor's recommendation, how much would the bill be over that?
Representative Huntley, or Swigum, I asked the question if it was over the target. I've not been following that. Representative Huntley did address that concern when in his opening remarks. I will defer to Representative Huntley. Representative Huntley, can you answer Representative Swigum's?
Roughly, I can't give you the dollar amount. I assume Mr. Marks probably can, but the governor was looking at an increase over 2006. 07 by about 16%, and this bill is 19.7, unless those numbers have been adjusted a little. But so we're about 3% higher than the governor.
Representative Swigum, is that sufficient of an answer?
I'll get the number to the House floor from Mr. Marks, but I think it's right around 230, 40 million over the governor's target. So that for the governor's recommendation, more than 240?
Too much?
Hey, Representative Holberg, did you have your hand up for that?
Mr. Chair, according to the document that Bill Marks provided for us, it's nearly $300
million. Yes. Other questions or concerns about the amendment? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, can you tell me just in the amendment, lines 1.5, to 1.13, is this, what is this, and I'm assuming it has fiscal impact if it's in this amendment right now.
Representative Huntley. Thank you. Representative McNamara, can you repeat your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Huntley, just the amendment that you brought forward, the 8-4, was, you said, the technical amendment to get the bill in balance.
It's a technical amendment to bring the bill in balance.
Right, but part of the first...
And it has to be done before we leave this committee. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first half of the amendment, I was just wondering what it was, because it looks like it's language about some policy or a mental health pilot project, and I'm just trying to follow what it is.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, it's my understanding that it was in the bill. It was incorrectly codified, and this simply corrects it.
Representative McNamara, are you satisfied with that?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not really. I'd like to hear it again. In other words, is this not the way our page 282, line 17 through 21, is not the way the bill passed out of finance? And then my follow-up question, maybe at the same time. I understand, and I guess I would just ask if the chair of the finance committee intends to ask for this part of it, if this is a policy change, why we're doing this one.
Representative McNamara, I think you make a good point. Are you saying that the lines of 1 through 13 of this particular amendment are policy change amendments? The same, as opposed to fiscal?
Mr. Chair, that was my original question, and I'm just probably more nervous now because it's taken so long. If that is the case, that's fine, but I'm just wondering. It doesn't seem like anybody knows what it is, and I certainly don't understand what it is, and that was my question.
Representative Huntley, can you give us some clarification?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Yes. Chair, can you identify yourself for the tape, please?
My name is Lynn Ace. I'm with House Research. Today when I was proofing the bill, I noticed the reviser had made a mistake. This is language that was in the bill as it passed out of both committees. They had unintentionally codified the language in a criminal law statute. It needs to be uncodified language. That's simply what this changes.
Are you satisfied?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I want everyone to be satisfied with that. Okay. Any other questions on this amendment to bring it into balance? Representative Huntley renews his motion on A4. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative McNamara, thank you for that clarification. Okay, now, members, I have 9 and 5 and 8 pages been passed out. Would you pass them out? I think at least 9 has been passed out. Is that correct? Let's get 5 and 8 passed out as well. And Mary Liz, are these offered by Dean, do you think? Representative Dean, are you going to be offering these?
Mr. Chair, the 8 and the 9.
The 8 and the 9. And we'll give you the opportunity to choose which one. 9 is out already. Would you like to do that one first?
Doesn't make a difference.
It's up to you, whatever you want.
Let's see. why don't we take up the 8 if that's going up, because I just got one change I got to do to it ahead of time. The A8 amendment is essentially inserting the healthy...
That's the second, Representative Dean. It's not being out yet.
Oh,
it's
thought it was
coming out. 9 is being out, but 8 is not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 8 is right being out right now, so just 1 second and we'll let you offer. On the previous one, we did not say Representative Dean, do you want to do an 8? It's available now.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Dean?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move the A8 amendment. I do have a verbal amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
Oral amendment, I'm sorry.
Oral one.
It would be to strike Section 6.
Which page is that?
That's on page 14 of the bill, Section 6 of the amendment. Sorry.
An amendment?
Of the amendment. It's the A8 amendment, page 14, Section 6. What that is, that's the healthy, the outreach program that Senator Berglund had, which is a very, very good program. Staff has indicated to me that that costs a little bit extra money, and it would put it out of balance. So we're going to go ahead and remove that section before going ahead, if that's okay.
Okay, Representative Dean incorporates the amendment into his A8 amendment, which is on page 14, deleting Section 6. That's incorporated into the amendment. It goes on to page 14, 15, through line 16.31. Is that correct? It goes on to 17, too. Is that correct?
Goes through
17.5. Okay?
All the way through 17.5. Thank you. Okay.
Representative Dean?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll be very brief. Representative Huntley, you've seen something very similar to this in at least one of the committees, so it should be fairly quick debate. What this does, members who have not seen this particular amendment or on the bill, this incorporates some of the governor's Healthy Connections Plan, which extends some of the reforms that he has through the connector program to kids. And what this essentially does is it replaces House File 1, which would be Representative Thiessen's bill, and it does it in the governor's fashion at a significant savings. In 08-09, the governor Healthy Connection cost $14 million, House File 1, $99. In 10-11, the governor's plan, $74 million. And in 10-11, House File 1, $373. So you can see that this is a very, very significantly more efficient way to deliver this. And it once again just kind of accenting our theme that this is focusing on private solutions versus adding more kids to Minnesota Care, covering them through the private market and keeping access throughout the state of Minnesota. And what we do is we would use these funds to decrease the Minnesota sick tax, which would provide some definite relief and immediately lower the cost of delivering medicine in Minnesota. We would like to have included some of Senator Berglund's healthy our outreach programs, which, as many people know, most of the kids who are uninsured in the state of Minnesota already qualify for public programs. And what her initiative did was go out and find those folks and sign them up for the most appropriate program. So with that, I would ask members for your support and ask for Representative Huntley's support on this as well.
Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair, this is an example of when I should keep my mouth shut. I told Representative Broad, who had this up in another committee, that it was the best amendment that I'd seen, and it really put me in a tough spot because, although I will say I do like Section 6 that you deleted, which is where one of the places we should be going.
Of a tough spot.
Well, Mr. Chair, I like the Medicare II approach, actually, and I always have hated the provider tax, and but I'm a team player, and I think that we voted this down once, and I think we should vote it down again.
Other discussion? Representative Dean?
Mr. Chair, members, this we've been working on this program for quite a long time, and Representative Abler and I began meeting with a group of doctors from Rochester who initially brought this forward to us as a way to deliver the right care at the right place at the right time for Minnesota kids. We still believe that we can cover more kids across the state of Minnesota at a much, much reduced cost. A pediatrician came to us and said that he receives about $80 for a well-child exam from Blue Cross Blue Shield, a little over $30 from Minnesota Care, and high 20s from MA. So we don't want to force providers out of business. We don't want to limit access. We think that a private market solution is possible for Minnesota kids. We think we can cover more kids at a much lower cost, and that's why I would appreciate your support.
And I would ask for a roll call. I need to ask a question. This, as I understand this one, does it save money to the general fund? You've taken out something that costs money, so it'd be out of your target. How about is the rest of it then policy, or is it a reduction in expenditures?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. It's a reduction in the provider tax. Okay. So it would reduce the cost of medicine.
Representative Carlson. Just a question, but it's a new policy then that reduces the provider tax. Is that, I mean, as I read the amendment here, there's all kinds of policy in it. I'm trying to think of how it is in the bill. So we're putting out a series of new policies. Series of new policies then that therefore have a result of reducing the provider tax. Is that how, am I describing that adequately?
Representative Dean?
I would say that the interpretation that I would have would be the same as the interpretation that the tax committee had, that this would be a monetary change from one account to another, and it would be fiscal in nature and not a policy in nature.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, can you quickly tell us, has any of this amendment been approved in any other committees?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Chumper, there are several segments of this, so I can't speak to every segment of this particular amendment. It's quite comprehensive, and it has several pieces to it, so I can't give you an answer to that question.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, I'm looking at, we're working on the 89 amendment, is that correct?
We are, no, the 8.
Okay.
The 8
I thought so.
Representative Abler. I'm sorry, Holbrook. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, you laid out the different reimbursement rates for a well-child visit. Can you tell me which ones of those actually cover the cost of providing that service?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, wasn't testimony, but the doctors that we had talked to said that both ME and Minnesota Care were significantly below their cost of doing business, and that they can only afford to see so many Minnesota Care patients and so many MA patients without going out of business.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I apologize. I'm not on the Health Committee. My predecessor warned me to never let them put me on those committees. That was one of his pieces of advice. With your amendment, will it result in having less children on MinCare and medical assistance programs?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, what this does is provides private insurance for those children throughout the state of Minnesota rather than Minnesota Care through the Connector program offered by the governor as the marquee piece of his reform efforts this year.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, I know when my kids were little and I would bring them in for well baby checkups or immunizations or whatever, at the time we were small business owners and bought insurance on the open markets and had a major medical but paid for all preventative care out of pocket. And I mean, one visit with one shot was nearly $100, and this is a long time ago, nearly 20 years ago. And I asked my pediatrician, I said, there's no way you're getting this much from the HMOs and the medical assistant patients for these visits. And he admitted that they weren't, and that people like me that were paying out of pocket subsidizing other health care plans that weren't able to pay as much for the same services. So if this amendment limits the number of people that are on Minnesota Care or MinCare and can provide them with coverage through a insurance program that pays more towards the cost of providing the service, I think it's a good thing, because in the long run this could cause a lot of cross-subsidy or payment by other health care buyers as well.
Representative, was that a question?
No, I want my support for the amendment. The unintended consequences, if we continue to increase the number of people on state-paid insurance plans that don't reimburse the providers for the full cost of the service, they're going to get that money somewhere else.
Representative Polberg, in testimony as well, we also understand that if we don't have people with any insurance, they show up in the emergency room, sometimes the most expensive care, and that's called uncompensated care, and that's shifted to all of us as well. My doctors and hospitals are a huge uncompensated care that they have to make up some other place.
But Mr. Chair, I didn't hear Representative Dean saying that kids wouldn't have care. I heard him say that it was an alternative, more market-based solution rather than a state-sponsored solution. So I think that both programs have the same goal of getting kids insured, but just with different approaches.
Representative Aber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things. To Representative Carlson and to yourself about the balance of the bill. I believe Article 8, which, as you're aware, is a very high cost, entails high health care access fund, heavy cover all kids proposal. I think there's about $100 million in the general fund out years, and then about $300 million in the next biennium in health care access fund. So I'm pretty sure that what they I didn't write this amendment, but there's a lot of money that is taken out to backfill what they want. I think the tax reduction is contingent upon the amount of money in the health care access fund on page 26 of the amendment. So probably it's fiscally balanced. Just for the coverage matter, though, and I'll be brief, but and we've discussed this much in the policy committee, and Justin Keith and I have continued to discuss the points from disagreement from some of the policy points of it. But when you what Article 8 creates is the medical assistance scale payment for many children, and an expanding number as time goes on based upon the bill. And I'm not going to review that with you now, but I need to caution you as the fiscal leaders of the House that if you create coverage at rates people can't afford to work, the providers cannot work for, they will not be interested in that kind of work for much. And you're certainly aware, any Medicaid-based program that we have in the state, they cannot work for those prices, be it Gillette Hospital, be it a nursing home, be it these health providers. These are all in the below-cost kinds of care. And that's the point about, that's kind of Holberg's point, that if you pay somebody below cost, they have to get higher monies elsewhere. The nursing homes rely on Medicare beds to have the short-term stays. I won't go into detail, but that's the issue that's here and on the policy debate of it. Representative Shumpert's question, yes, this bill did pass the policy committee on its way to finance. I would not say that it was enthusiastically supported by the majority members, but it did. There was a vote by which it passed the committee as a vehicle bill. So that's a little tongue-in-cheek for you.
Representative Haber, my question to you is,
this paying under cost is a new phenomena that's starting here now?
Representative Solberg, no, it's not, but let me, the expansion, my point has been all along, and if you look at House File 578, which is a product of a good, very policy-based think tank of tripartisan people with no one higher than the other, it's just a very, we're trying to point out that the target of people to deal with is the 7.4% uninsured, and to focus on those. And when you take people who are happily insured in group and private coverages, as House File, as Section Article 8 does, and take them and put them into medical assistance prices with a small increase in pricing, that you're putting some of these providers at risk. And currently, if you were to backfill the medical assistance programs to pay providers prices that they could actually work for, it'd be, I think, $200 million.
Representative Hundley?
Well, Mr. Chair, this bill does eliminate the Cover All Kids that's part of our bill. I did carry the governor's bill. There's lots of things still in this bill, even without this amendment. But the governor's bill was estimated to add about 14,000 kids to the insured roll. And the Cover All Kids adds about 50,000. So if you support this amendment, you will have fewer kids being added to the insured roll.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, Representative Dean, did you want to...
Just okay. One, I think.
I'm sorry, Representative.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Hundley, if you know, are providers required to take medical assistance patients currently under current law?
Representative Hundley.
I think we have a rule 101 which says that if they don't take... I think the number is about 20%, but different for dentists, that then they also cannot treat state employees. So basically they're, in many cases, in a position where they have to take people on medical assistance or Minnesota care.
And, Mr. Chair, that's up to a certain percentage of their patient load?
That's my understanding. If I remember right, it's about 20%.
And so if we greatly increase the number of kids that are having this type of coverage, my parents did foster care for years, and I know they had one heck of a time finding doctors and dentists that would service these foster kids that came in with their state-paid-for medical. So it may have changed some since then, but if there's just a threshold and you greatly increase the number of kids in the system, you also might have limited access to care as well.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the access point, I think you absolutely, if we, this type of ballooning of Minnesota care and actual migration of people from private insurance to Minnesota care will absolutely affect access, particularly in outstate Minnesota. And if you question that, just think about what we've seen with providers for dental care for MA and how hard it is to find a dentist who will provide services to MA patients. We have a very legitimate fear that we're going to see the same thing happening in Pipestone and in Crookston and around the state for providers, for particularly for pediatric care for kids, if this were to continue in the unsustainable trajectory that the numbers tell us that we see. So that's why we feel that this will actually provide more care to more kids across the state by protecting access. I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Any other discussion? The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg?
No.
Abler?
Yes.
Reinert?
No.
Carlson?
No.
Clark?
No.
Dean?
Yes.
Eakin?
No.
Earhart?
Yes.
Greiling? Gunther?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
No.
Kilty?
No.
Holberg?
Yes.
Huntley?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Mariani?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Murphy Aaron.
No.
Murphy Mary.
No.
Osmond Paulson.
Aye.
Pulowski.
No.
Sertich.
No.
Smith.
Yes.
Swigum.
Yes.
Swales.
No.
Shumper.
No.
There being 9 A's and 16 nays, the amendment fails. Representative Dean, do you have 9? Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A9 amendment.
Okay, Representative Dean moves amendment S2171A9. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and Representative Huntley. This is the same amendment that I offered in the Finance Committee. And what this does is it achieves a goal that both Democrats and Republicans on the committee shared, which was to get our nursing home COLA reimbursements up to 5% and 5%, which Representative Fritz worked very hard for, and we want to join her in that effort. We think that that would be an absolutely great thing we could do for direct care workers. And the way we pay for that with this particular bill in A9 is we use the governor's financing vehicle of refinancing the TANF dollars to fund the 5 and 5 COLA for direct care workers. So that's a very, very simple explanation of what it does. Again, it's familiar territory for Representative Huntley. I would ask for your support of this bill or amendment. I would ask for a roll call as well.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, what this bill does, or this amendment, excuse me, it takes money away from one needy group and gives it to another worthwhile place. The governor takes in his bill $72 million of TANF money, which is federal money, manipulates it around so it ends up in the bottom line and uses it for other things unrelated to people in the TANF program. What this amendment does is basically the same thing. Takes that $72 million intended for TANF recipients and gives it, in this case, to nursing home workers who certainly deserve this raise. But I don't think this is an appropriate use of TANF money. It was intended by the federal government that it would be used for people in MPIP or the TANF program. And in the bill that we have, almost all the TANF money is used for those TANF recipients. And so I would urge you to not support the amendment.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, what the governor does and what this amendment does is it recognizes that we have several programs in the state of Minnesota that are eligible for TANF funds that are using general funds for those particular expenditures. And what this does is it uses TANF dollars for those purposes, very appropriately so, and frees up the general fund money to provide some help for our for our direct care folks in the nursing homes. And that's when you say refinancing, it's actually taking dollars, putting them into TANF eligible funds. That is why it's a completely appropriate use of TANF dollars and a good idea for us.
Yeah, roll call has been requested. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I would move to divide the amendment, and that would be to vote on line 19-7. Separately and vote on that line first.
Page 19, line 7, is that correct?
Yes.
Representative Huntley moves to divide. Thank you.
But the bill has meets that is
1977. Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, Mr. Chair, maybe I wasn't hearing correctly, but could you tell me which side we want to vote on first?
Just 1 second, if you would, please. He was saying he wanted the one line first, but let me see if I want to make sure. I went back to page 115. That was kind of some new fever. They got to check on it. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I hate to do this, but I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you,
Amendment
Huntley, because it's going to wrap the rule against you. Okay, a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg.
No.
Abler.
Yes.
Reiner.
No.
Carlson.
No.
Clark.
No.
Dean.
Yes.
Eakin.
Yes.
Earhart.
Yes.
Greiling. Gunther. Gunther. Billstrom.
No.
Gilkey.
No.
Holberg.
Yes.
Huntley.
No.
Kahn.
No.
Mariani.
No.
McNamara.
Yes.
Murphy Aaron.
Nope.
Murphy Mary.
No.
Osmond. Paulson.
Aye.
Pulowski.
Yes.
Sertich.
No.
Smith.
Yes.
Swigum.
Yes.
Swales.
No.
Shumper.
No.
There being 10 A's and 14 A's, the motion fails. Amendment fails. Then A5, Representative Dean, is that yours?
Sure, that's mine.
I'm sorry, Representative Aver?
Mine, yeah.
Representative Aver, would you like to move S2171A5?
And Mr. Chair, this is an effort to reduce the health costs. And if we did all these things, we would save money, which makes it a money amendment, I'm sure, right? Even though it sounds like it's only policy. In particular, I just got a note from the community health people on Section 11 on page 4, and they said if we can do this, this would save money. It takes $5 or $6 million to pay the money. So I think we're not going to spend that kind of money today. But I do want to point out to members that I'm going to change that shell to a may and then offer it on the floor. But I want to abide by the chair's desire not to do policy amendments. And so I appreciate the chance to offer this today and just prepare it for the floor.
So you're withdrawing the amendment. Other amendments? I don't have any other amendments. Discussion or revision? Sweet.
No amendments.
Discussion. Yeah.
And let me first, with all honesty, say I'm overwhelmed by this bill.
Representative Swigum, so is the people who do the copying on it.
But they had an idea of what was in it. I have to tell you very honestly, and I bet you if four-fifths of the members at this table would be honest with themselves, they would be overwhelmed with the bill, too, in relationship to what's in it and what's not in it. Obviously, in the big picture, I'm concerned that we better plan for part two or phase two or option two. If $320 million over the governor's recommendations, it's not going to fly, folks, and we all know that. We're going through a dam. I would tell you that I'm concerned about some of the changes in welfare reform that have been initiated over the past years, which I think are important, necessary, prudent, and bring some responsibility to the system. But most importantly, I'm concerned about the caregivers for our nursing homes and the caregivers in our day treatment centers and in our group homes and our waivered service sites. And Mr. Huntley, let me first tell you, I do appreciate the increase generally that's in here. The 3 and 3 is a good thing to do. With this kind of money you have available, I'm surprised you couldn't do more, very honestly. But I realize you have other priorities as well. With the kind of money you had in this bill, you should have been able to do more than 3 and 3. I have two questions, Mr. Huntley, I guess, when I get to nursing homes and day treatment centers. The first is I see that there's some special increases for some special facilities around the state. Big Stone County, Kennebec County, St. Louis County, Rice County, Faribault, Chisago County, Robbinsdale. Can you tell me about those nursing homes or those day treatment rehabilitation centers, why they have some special rate changes, rate increases, and not others?
I can tell you about Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum. The first of all, the one of the bigger ones is the one going into Robbinsdale. That is a current facility that's located in Minneapolis on River Road, close to the Shriners Hospital. It's a very specialized nursing home, looking at people that have very high needs. A lot of them need physical management because they're violent. And the current facility is simply outdated and can't be converted into something that would meet any of today's codes. So they're going to build a new facility in Robbinsdale and on a site that they already own. They used to have a nursing home on that site. That particular facility is very important for Hennepin County because it's about the only place where this type of patient can be discharged from the hospital. They can't discharge them, they stay in the hospital and where the cost is much higher. So that's a particular case. The one in Waseca is a particular facility that wants to actually, I think, downsize a little, but they're also adding a section that will be able to give nursing home care to people on ventilators. And that is, there's no, currently no nursing home south of Twin Cities that can really handle people on ventilators. That's a joint venture between this nursing home and the Mayo Clinic that's actually going to manage the ventilator part of that. There are some other adjustments for various types of facilities around, some in St. Cloud in Representative Gottwald's district, some other ones around the state. In some cases, the one in Rice County was I think it was Rice. That's the one that if they're within 2.5 miles of the border of Dakota County, they get the same rate that Dakota County has. And it's, you and I have discussed many times, we have this geographic problem, and somehow we're going to have to start to address it. Some of the other ones are, again, special needs people. The one in there's one in Crosby, I believe, that is a teen challenge. There's one in Duluth that's a teen challenge. That's to try to get young adults that are chemically dependent or alcoholic dependent and put them in a structured environment for a much longer period of time than is usual. And this organization has a outstanding record of getting a high percentage of these young people back into society. But the current reimbursement rates for that kind of facility are just don't cover their costs. It's a private charitable organization, and they are putting lots of their charity money in there, but they can only lose so much, and they'll have to drop some of their facilities. They have facilities around the state as well.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, President Hudley, I'm aware of the Robbinsdale site, the move from Hennepin or from Minneapolis, I believe, out there. I'm not sure how that relates to an increased per diem, but I'm aware of the move. I still need to be spoken to about the increased per diem and the necessity of that. I'm aware of the one in Wasika with the ventilator dependencies. I think creating a whole new unit for ventilator dependent patients. Some of them that you mentioned seem to be, you know, whether you're 2 miles away from that geographic grouping of geographic one, like maybe a Northfield site in Rice County, or whether you're 13 miles away, such as the nursing homes in my district. I you know, where's the cutoff? Is it 2? Is it 12? Is it 13? Should I have some amendments on the floor to recognize some other facilities, too, that might be 2.5 miles away from the geographic one rating?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum, what these are, the Robbinsdale one and the Wasika one are a little bit different.
They're a little different than the others.
The ones that are getting closer to the metro area are major. What this is a Band-Aid. What we need to do is the rebasing, and that was just too expensive for me to get into this by any.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, I think it's too expensive if you're going to spend all the money in other initiatives in other areas, including child care. Represents Slawick is sitting there, 100%, 6% increase, including all the other initiatives, the reversal of the welfare reforms. If you're going to spend money there, it's too expensive. You've got plenty of money to do that. My last question, Representative Huntley, is if you go ahead the rebasing of our nursing home facilities here, I think in the out years, in the next biennium. And I'm trying to get my hands on this. I don't understand it totally. But before you do the rebasing, wouldn't it be good in those three geographic groups to have some equity in the reimbursement before we went to rebasing of the nursing home rates?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swigum, I wish we could have started with rebasing, because that goes into a community, looks at what it costs them to run that particular facility, and makes some judgments about whether that's a justifiable rate, and then reimburses them at that rate. And I think that is a better approach than simply saying we're going to have one statewide rate for everyone.
Except, Mr. Chairman, absolutely. I think you, by doing that without some equity there, first you build in, naturally build in, into the future. You build in the disparities and the unfairness that exists right now, would you not?
Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum, if a nursing home is in a very competitive area where they have to compete for LPNs, nurses aides, RNs, that have opportunities to work at a higher wages nearby, then what will happen is that they will have already started to pay their nurses aides more, and they'll be losing money doing that. And if you go in and rebase and look at those things, then those facilities that are right on the edge of either losing money or are already losing money will certainly get an advantage to being rebased.
Other questions on it? Representative Gunther?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Huntley, I want to thank you for the fact that you are planning to rebase nursing homes. And I want to tell you, in my district, I have 7 nursing homes. All 7 are in six-figure Red A. Before your rebasing is done, over half of those will be closed. What are we going to do with those residents that prefer to be near home, that have good care? And this is not just a malady for my district. Representative Surtees district probably got the same problems. I look at... Pardon me?
He's a geographic.
No, he's not. He's got the same problems. We've talked about it. But anyway, I look at 5 out of those 7 nursing homes are the biggest employers in the communities they're in. What's going to happen to the town? I know you care. And I know if there's any way that you can get the rebasing done ahead of time, I'm confident that you're going to do that. And as far as the COLA is concerned, I appreciate you getting it to 3. I'd appreciate it even more if you get it to 5. Because so far we have covered salary increases. We have not covered hospitalization increases for those employees. We have not covered increased in heating expenses for those facilities. They are in dire straits. Last year, I was one of the exceptions like you were talking about before. The people in Truman, Minnesota were ready to give the state the keys. Number one employer in the town, and I begged, I guess, Representative Bradley, please give me a little bit more so maybe they can hang on, because they went through all their borrowing limits. They went all through all the money they had. They literally, their next step was to say, here, state, we can't do it anymore. I really know that you understand the problem, and I know, if at all possible, other than taking away from the kids, that you're going to do that. Thank you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you remember the last committee we gathered at and looked at this bill, Representative Huntley, it was the Finance Committee, and I raised the question, not that these folks out there don't need a cost of living raise, but that when you're considering a cost of living differential, because there is the cost of living differential across the state. And primarily, it is housing. I went to House Research and got the runs, the latest run here, on the average value of homes across the state. You mentioned specifically that Duluth, St. Cloud, and Olmsted, the price of hiring a nurse was very, very close. And as a matter of fact, here's the low value on Duluth, St. Cloud, and Olmsted. $111,000, this is home now. $122,000 St. Cloud, Olmsted, $120,000. High value, $222,000 Duluth, $245,000 St. Cloud, $240,000 in Olmsted. And they also have a rate of extra high value at Duluth, $333,368, St. Cloud, $360,000 in Olmsted. Those are relatively the same. But if you look at the metro area, the low-value home is $181,000 average versus $111,000, $122,000, $120,000. The high-value home is $362,000 in the metro area versus $222,000 in Duluth, $245,000 in St. Cloud, and Olmsted at $240,000. And the high value in the metro area is $544,000. And incidentally, these are broken out. This is all the metro, because these can be broken out by different parts of the metro. That's $544,000 average in the metro, $333,000 in Duluth, $368,000 in St. Cloud, and Olmsted, $360,000. The low value of Greater Minnesota housing is $101,500,000, high value of $304,400. So you're talking to, if you're considering that your rebasing is going to make everybody equal, that's not correct. It should not. It should give the people a raise, but commensurate with the areas they live in. Now, Swigum went through the roof.
I think that wherever Licavini is, he was going berserk, and
I'd like to know one through the roof and one through berserk.
Right, and you didn't believe it. And I'd be happy to share these thoughts with you, and it's primarily housing that drives the cost of living across the state. And there is a big difference. Thank you.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I think that we tried to be cooperative today and move this along, but I do want on the record your commitment to me that this bill will not hit the House floor till we have worksheets that work and targets that make sense, and we know that we've got the right numbers on the worksheets and that everything is in order at least a day before it comes to the House floor.
You have my commitment, and I have my commitment also, and I get the tails numbers and they get them figured out. You'll get them the same time I will. We can even walk down there together if you want.
Well, and I appreciate that, but this is a big bill,
right.
And the tails, from what I've been told, the first research document that I was provided by our research organization showed that this was 250 more or 260 more than the governor, and now they're saying it's 306 in this biennium for what was a 19.7% increase. I'm assuming we're up in the 21 range of increase for this biennium, and for an overall increase over the two bienniums of nearly 42%, which in turn will likely be higher given these new numbers. And we know that health care costs are a big driver in everybody's budget, but I'm very concerned with the growth, and that money's going to have to come from somewhere. And we'd like to see the runs on all your bills together with all your tails to make sure that certainly it's far more spending than I think anybody on our side of the aisle wants to see, because we know that it comes at a cost. But we'd like to see the numbers in writing as far as how this all will work.
Yeah, my commitment that that will happen. Representative Paulson, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is along the line of Representative Holbrook. Representative Huntley, I've heard some of the numbers presented similar to what Representative Holbrook has talked about, that this is about a 20% increase, and that the next biennium potentially could be a 40% increase. And I'm just curious, do you have any idea, and I guess, again, I'd love to have it if you don't have it now, what will it be in the future? It just looks to me like we're setting ourselves up for just something total that we can't afford. I remember Representative Bradley used to talk about how if we don't get control now in a few years, this part of our bill, though I will say, Representative Huntley, I think physically it's as big as all the other bills put together. I'm wondering if Representative Bradley used to talk about, that it will consume our entire budget. And I'm just wondering, are we going down a scary path if it's 20% this biennium, 40%, when we start getting on those curves? What are we setting ourselves up for? Are we setting ourselves up for something that the folks in Minnesota can't afford?
Representative Huffey, I guess that was a question.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, this is the fundamental problem this country faces, is rising health care costs. And it's not just those in public programs. It's for everybody, and they're all going up about the same rate. In fact, if you look at a per patient or per client in these public programs, the rate of increase is probably less than the rate of increase in your premiums for your health insurance. We do need to get a grip on it, and Representative Bunn's bill, and which is also included in this bill, has a number of innovative things to try to finally get a grip on how we pay the health delivery system. We have portions of our bill from the governor, which I strongly support, which are trying to get back to looking at the fundamental parts of our healthcare system, and it's quite clear from the testimony we had from a whole variety of people that if you want to save money in healthcare, what you have to do is manage people that have a chronic illness in such a way that they don't get sicker. And that's where the big savings are. And we had testimony from two of our hospitals, one in the cities, one in Duluth, that actually reduced spending on people with heart failure by about 50% and improved their health at the same time. The trouble is that they both lost money because they can't get reimbursed for what it takes to improve the health and reduce the spending. And until we change the fundamental way we pay for health care, we're not going to get those changes that can save us lots of money. And the real crux of this is getting after the waste and inefficiency in our health care system, and it's a lot of it is there because of the way we reimburse providers. We don't reward them for doing the right things. And the governor's got some good ideas on this. I think Representative Bunn's article or bill has some good things. Is that going to solve the problem for this biennium? No. But we do need to get a grip on it, because you're absolutely right. This budget is going up at about 10% a year. Just the base went up 14%. The governor's proposal went up 16% for the biennium. So his proposal was an 8% increase each year. We're a little bit above that. But until we get a grip on these rising health care costs, you want to know what it's doing to the state budget. In 1985, the amount of money we spent on health and human services and higher ed was about the same percentage of the state budget. Today, we're spending three times as much on health and human services as we are in higher ed.
Representative McNamara,
why do you think tuition is so high?
Matt, Representative McNamara, just on the point of efficiencies, and there's no magic bullet on this, but within a few miles from my house, we got a new facility, and because some doctors couldn't get along with other doctors, and we want to have all the things, within a mile and a half, I have three expensive MRI machines that we're paying for in our, that are, when they're sitting there not being used. It's like a farmer having three combines and only using one. And if we'd had some kind of a system in place that someone made a decision along the line that they wanted their own machine for their own facility because they have difficulties with the other one, instead of sitting down and cooperating, I got three of them within a mile and a half. And I'm sure they're not used very often, at least in facilities. I mean, they're allowed to do that, but I know that's a cost-driving factor in our health care costs. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I agree with what you're saying. And Representative Huntley, I like a lot of what you said. I appreciate it, because I don't serve in this committee, and it seems like you have an understanding of some of what we're up against. I appreciate that. My only disappointment is the governor's was growing so fast, and yours is even growing faster. You are right. It's big picture, long-term stuff. But I don't see us addressing it, and that's what's so frustrating for me, because we just can't grow this fast. And both you and Chair Solberg have addressed some of the things that we need to deal with. And I appreciate that, but at the same point, as scary as it is, we're going down a path that I'm afraid that we can't survive going down this path. And it's about making hard choices here, and I just think that's what we were sent here to do, and we need to do it in the most efficient manner. And I appreciate both of your big picture are looking at the frustration, and thank you for serving on this committee, because it's got to be a tough assignment.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Very briefly, I think some of the points that that Representative Huntley brought up are absolutely critical. We do need to get at the cost drivers of medicine, which is basically how we take care of ourselves. And people with two or more chronic conditions eat up 80% of all our health care dollars in the state, and that's where we need to go. I think both sides agree with that. I think both sides agree that the system, the current system of reimbursement that we have in the state of Minnesota is fundamentally flawed and broken, and it doesn't work anymore, particularly for families and small businesses. That's what we really need to get at. We have one proposal that says we want to build on our strengths, which is we have the healthiest state in the country. We have the lowest number of uninsured in the country. We want to look at what makes us strong and build on that, which is our nurses, doctors, and researchers in the private sector. We have another approach that says we're going to grow government programs. We're going to grow MA. We're going to grow Minnesota Care, and we're going to have more people jumping into a big government pool. And it's a fundamentally two very, very fundamentally different directions that we're trying to go in at the same time. This bill does not take both sides into consideration. This bill is a strong pivot towards single payer. It's a strong pivot towards growing our public programs. And all you need to do is to look at the tails in this proposal. We're growing not at 18%, but 40% over the next two biennia. We can't afford this. The state absolutely cannot afford to go in this direction, and I believe it will actually provide less access across the state of Minnesota. And I think we're not only going to have a debate on the floor and probably across in the coffee shops across the state of whether or not we can afford this, we're going to have a debate about whether or not we want to move towards what would be a socialized medicine. And I think that's the real debate that we need to have going forward, not just a financial one.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I was just going to pick up on your comment about your example with the MRIs. We used to have a certificate of need law in Minnesota. It was a federal requirement that every state develop a certificate of need process, and hospitals supported it. Clinics began to lobby to get out from under it, and it began to unravel, and it was one of those things that had only worked if everybody was under it, and in the end it was repealed, and you see now what's happening with your example locally, and that's truly across the state. That's one component in these drivers is there are certain advantages with technology, but you have to efficiently use that technology because it's so expensive, and that's where that debate centered.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've been on the Health and Human Services Policy and Finance Committee for the first time. And Representative Huntley, our chair, has, I think, demonstrated uncommon leadership in helping us to see that we need to be paying attention to the 93% of the people who have coverage and are paying a lot of money for their coverage, and they're concerned about the security of their coverage. I came here wanting to make sure that everybody had access, but I understand to do that we need to look at the cost issues, and he's made us look long and hard at facts, and we've looked at them in committee. I think Representative Dean and Representative Abler can help educate some of the members of the minority about what's in this bill before we get to the floor so that they understand that we are intent on health reform and cost containment coming out of this House, and we're going to do that next year. And so I want to tell you that I think the committee's worked very hard on this bill, and I think we've got a lot of promise for next session, and I look forward to working with each of you on that. Thank you. Thank you, Representative
Huntley. Any other discussion? If not, Representative Huntley renews his motion that Senate File 2171, as amended, be passed and placed on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried. Members, we will announce a short meeting sometime this week, and it'll be to deal with the budget targets on TANF and health care act. Short meeting. We might be able to do that as well. As soon as we get the numbers, we'll give those to you. I think that would be, there's some other small bills here, but I wanted to get the major bills out first. Okay.
Well, I don't know for sure. I was just thinking if we might have some other small bills, or there's a couple other bills in possession that need to move later on. It depends on what happens on the House floor. Meeting is adjourned.